Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's so out of character. It's so unlike me. It is a Thursday afternoon, a Thursday evening, perhaps a Friday morning, wherever you are. But wherever you are and whatever it is, it's kind of unusual that I would be on the air on a Thursday of late since late August. Because it's middle school football season, of course, and usually I'm somewhere busily, professional broadcaster here. Don't try this at home. Busily videoing and watching Ferg's middle school football game. But such is not the case tonight. No. Even middle schools have bye weeks. And this is ours. So rather than being off somewhere around the wilds of Fayette County on some football watching expedition, I'm here. I'm in the studio. And I like it. I like four straight days of broadcasting. And of course, we will, we'll get back to normal sooner rather than later because it's not a very long middle school football season to begin with. But I'm awfully glad to be here this evening, and I'm awfully glad that you're here. Nice crowd going in the chat room already. So I hope you're ready for 3 hours of good conversation. I hope you will participate in 3 hours of good conversation on just about anything that you want to talk about. And I, of course, I've got a couple of topics that I think we would do well to address. Of course, you cannot begin the broadcast this evening without somehow or another referencing the natural disaster and the horror taking place in Indonesia. The United Nations at present estimating that over 1,100 people are dead in the quakes that struck Indonesia in the last 24 hours. There was the quake itself. There have been mudslides and collapses, losses of electricity, all the things that are attendant upon a natural disaster such as this that struck around the city of Padang in Indonesia. I'm sure that there are relief agencies on the way, but let me, just as a word, a word to the wise is sufficient, and with that in mind, if you are inclined, and I'm not urging you not to, no, far from it, but if you are inclined to try to help out with the relief in Indonesia, please be careful about whom you give money to. You can never be too careful. I remember when the tsunami struck back around Christmas a few years back, and lo and behold, one of the first people in line with their hands out was an organization that was tied to one Marion Patrick or Marion Francis Robertson. Yeah, Marion Francis, because Pat, again, he's a Republican whose name isn't what he says his name is. But it turned out it was money going into the greasy little fists of Pat Robertson. And there were people, lo and behold, giving money away to Pat Robertson to send Bibles to people who desperately needed food, shelter, and clothing. I was reminded of this when I received a press release from what I can only consider to be a right-wing religion industry agency. No sooner were the dead beginning to be counted in western Sumatra than I got a press release. MAF responds to massive earthquake in Indonesia. Aviation ministry flies in relief and assessment teams amid devastation. MAF is apparently Mission Aviation Fellowship. How I got on this email list, I don't know. Let's see. Friends of MAF can help in two ways. First, they can pray that rescue workers gain access to people who need food and medical care. Lord, again with the praying. Second, they can make financial gifts. Oh, well, okay. Yeah, that's actually kind of flipped there. What they want is the financial gifts and the praying they can neither. Yeah, the praying they can do without. They want the money. These are missionary teams of aviation, communications, technology, and education specialists who build God's kingdom. Oh, Lordy. So the hustle is on. The hustle is on. So just, you know, just be aware. When you dig deep to try to help out in these efforts, just remember that there are, because we have a religion industry in this country, that there are a lot of people who are actively and excitedly and almost orgiastically going to try to profit from the misery and the agony of suffering poor people. Because that's one of the things that down through the centuries, the religion industry is best at. Capitalizing on misery. Well, you may be starving to death, but God still loves you. God got a bowl of porridge I can eat? No, but he loves you. Live on hay day by day. There'll be pie in the sky when you die. John Fox is reminding me, if folks want to help and be sure that it's going to get there, there's no better agency than World Vision Australia. You can go to worldvision.com.au, worldvision.com.au/home, HOME.ASPX, World Vision Australia. And I don't mean to be so cynical, but see, I remember that... You remember Bill the Cat Killer Frist, who went to visit the tsunami area after it had struck and was heard to say, he was Senate Majority Leader Bill the Cat Killer Frist, his family actively involved in one of the great bunco healthcare organizations of the time. But he was heard to say, now y'all get a picture of me over here and get some of that real good devastation in the background. Make sure you get the devastation in the background. Yeah. I've been hearing about this all day long, and of course, as is the case with a natural disaster like this, the news just gets worse and worse and worse, and the horrors mount. And when I think about the prowling jackals of the religion industry who see this as an opportunity to help these poor people establish a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, I want to vomit. I truly do. Because, you know, if you go and you actually read the Gospels, you won't find, you know, when Jesus, we're a little hungry. Well, I got some loaves and fishes here. There's how many? 5,000, Lord. Wow, somebody get me a sharp knife. But he never asked them to pray or confess or give money or anything. just started handing out the loaves and fishes, and yea, verily, lo and behold, there was enough to feed the multitudes. Lord, heal me, for I have a sickness. I am... Well, you got any money, kid? Need to donate a little money, or I can't heal you. I can't heal you for free. It takes money to run this ministry, you see. No, it didn't work like that. He reached out to the miserable and the agonized and the aching and the weak, the wounded and the weary, and gave comfort. And you'll notice that he's not, since there wasn't a New Testament at the time, you'll notice that he never, not once, passed out a copy of the Torah. Here, I've got a little tiny pocket-sized scroll for you, son. Here, go read it. No. Back then, the scrolls didn't say placed by the Gideons. They said placed by Gideon. That's a little cheap humor there. No, he went about doing the work. But anymore, apparently, these people can't do the work without having their hands out. So just something to keep in mind as you watch the horror mount up and you start trying to figure out some way to do better, some way to do good, some way to answer the call of aching humanity. Just be careful where your money goes. And make sure you're not giving to a right-wing religion industry outfit. The details themselves, by the way, you might be interested to know that the agony of over 1,100 families with over 1,100 dead in Indonesia, you might be interested to know that that fell to second place behind Dow plunges 205 points on economic reports. Are there any doubts? Now, this is the CNN.com. Are there any doubts what trumps human suffering? Money! Money, baby! The economy! That's 1,100 times more important than any dead Indonesian. Oh, where the hell's Indonesia anyway, Marveline? It's somewhere. South Bend's in Indonesia, ain't it? Ain't that where they got that Catholic school? After all, it wasn't that long back that we had one of those stories that said, 90% of Americans can't find their own ass on a map. And those surveys seem to come out with almost, with sad and sickening regularity. Two mammoth earthquakes in 2 days struck Sumatra. UN Humanitarian Chief John Holmes, somebody find radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee and let him give that get us out of the UN speech again. How about? See, that's the thing. I'm sorry, I do this dot connecting where maybe there's no connection to be made between the dots. But if there is some overarching grand energy thingy god that isn't a white-bearded old juvenile delinquent in the sky, I'm pretty confident. But if there is, I have a feeling that energy source, that presence, that being, hears people like radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee saying, we need to take a jackhammer and just start chipping away this little chunk of Manhattan Island, float the son of a bitch out to sea. And then he looks over at a place like Padang and touches it with his plague-ridden finger and watches death bloom like flowers of agony. To serve, hopefully, as a little reminder to monsters and servants of Satan like radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee. That one should be careful in one's words. Because, of course, it is the United Nations that is responding first. It is the United Nations that is in there immediately. United Nations humanitarian chief John Holmes said the numbers, I fear, will rise as more information becomes available. It's still feared that thousands of people are trapped under damaged houses and many buildings. Roads are cut off, telecommunications are down, electricity is down, heavy rainfall is pouring. They are stacking corpses like cordwood outside hospitals in Padang. The quake was 6.6 on the Richter scale, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. And there was a huge earthquake just 3 years ago, the Yogyakarta earthquake, and it's expected that casualties may very well surpass those. It killed more than 5,000 people. That's a hot little spot of the world where the world is still being born, and the earth shakes and the earth moves and there are volcanoes. And things like this, even for survivors who are described as stunned and dazed, there is no relief. There is nothing. Can you imagine having your world suddenly reduced to a place where the word normal is simply not applicable at any time, anywhere, and anyway? The hospital's been partially damaged. A market has caught on fire. The airport was closed down for inspection because planes might not be able to land on the runway anymore. Whatever you do, however you, if you pray, send good thoughts, do so. But remember that in many ways, actions have consequences. Remember the word, you know, we had a little bit of fun with Mark Twain the other night, last night. But remember what he said in the war prayer. When you pray for a blessing upon yourself, you inherently pray for a curse upon another human being. It's worth bearing in mind, isn't it? And by the same token, when a freak pandering to the absolute, you know, Abraham Lincoln talked about the better angels of our nature. When your radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee and you're pandering to the absolute worst among us, the Fox News demographic, and you're babbling on about floating the UN out to sea, you're not speaking to what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature. You are speaking to the worst demons of our nature. And somehow or another, as our friend Kate on the Desert says, chaotic systems are self-correcting. And that correction can come and that correction will come. Although I'm sure radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee is praying fervently right now for all those poor heathens in Padang. Sorry, I just didn't feel like it would be appropriate to start the show this evening without acknowledging what's going on there. Because there is a ton of other stuff going on here as well. Speaking of the lights going on, the lights have gone on for none other than South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. Yes. Bless my soul, they have. Lindsey Graham has opined upon Glenn Beck, and the lights have gone on for him. Oddly enough, however, it's sort of a decade late and a deficit short, I guess. We'll get to that as well. We got a healthcare horror story for you this evening. Oh, my goodness. We are going to have so much fun tonight. I'm not trying to be a downer. I worry about that. You know that. But God Almighty, how do you share this information and try to make it happy? You know, nothing makes me sicker than when I turn over to the local news and I see the babbling bobbleheads doing happy talk and smiling at each other with a smile that is more artificial than that of a hooker looking at a John. I can't stand it. And at least because we are reality-driven, it's kind of hard to get around the reality-flavored aspects of what goes on in the world. And so there are some healthcare stories, and I'm sorry, there just aren't many happy-ending, for-profit healthcare stories, avarice-driven healthcare stories out there. Yes, we paid a fortune for our health care, and because we paid a fortune, our doctor cared about us a little bit more, and we got a little better care because we were participating in the anarcho-randian, profit-driven, avarice-motivated health care system, and now we're all better. No. She's in no work like that. But, I got a story. I got a story. Remind me, would you, please? And, of course, we had a little adventure today, Agnes and I. We went over across the river to the county seat and attended a little hearing concerning the mountaintop removal operation not too far from our home here. An interesting and telling thing in its own right. The very nature of what was being put forward was telling, insofar as the lawyers for the coal company, aided and abetted by the lawyer for the Department of Environmental Protection, were arguing that the people who lived around here and had to put up with that misery need to sit down and shut the hell up and quit complaining. Because they, by God, are coal! And you know, of course, the ball has dropped, as it were, on the new climate bill in the Senate, which, of course, is agonizingly weak. And you know how the other day I said I praise people when they do right and I criticize them when they do wrong, and I heaped praise on Senator Rockefeller for getting the health care issue right? No good deed goes unpunished, because then he turned around and got the climate energy bill completely, 100% wrong. Yeah. And I've got that here handy somewhere. I've got Rockefeller's statement on the introduction of the Boxer Carry Bill. Jay not happy. And you know, I got to tell you, again, as you know, I've been watching this new Ken Burns documentary at the insistence and recommendation of several of you, and I'm so grateful that you've reminded me to pay attention to it, because it has been just I love it when my mind gets opened to new stuff I didn't know. And I get to know new things. I know that may sound like considerable oversimplification, but it really is. That's what it boils down to. I get to watch this. It's inspiring, and I get to know new things. I get to add to my store of knowledge. And one of the things that I'm learning about is how instrumental my senator, Jay Rockefeller's grandfather, David Rockefeller, was in helping to acquire the lands that created so many of the national parks in this country. Which just stands in stunning and stark relief against Jay Rockefeller's insistence that these West Virginia mountains that he calls home need to be destroyed more. That more streams need to be buried. That more mountains need to be blown up. that more toxins and poisons and deadly carcinogens need to be released into our communities, our waterways, our air, and insinuated into the very bodies themselves of we, ourselves, and those of our children, our grandchildren, and progeny, as yet unconceived and undreamt of. That dichotomy is absolutely stunning, and I'm trying to figure out some way to write it so that I can just write a letter to Rockefeller's office and ask him, how can you stray so far from the good and decent impulses of your grandfather in caring for the wild places of America? Because that's exactly what he's doing. Oh, God, where is this thing? Ah, here it is. Yeah, here it is. Senator Rockefeller's statement on Kerry Boxer climate bill.
Senator Jay Rockefeller released the following statement regarding climate legislation introduced today by Senators Barbara Boxer and John Kerry. The climate legislation proposed today by Senators Boxer and Kerry is a disappointing step in the wrong direction, and I am against it.
Okay. I say this just because I know how he is. I apologize for personalizing the program, but it's only fair for me to say, John Fox, sit down, John Fox, because otherwise you're going to run around the room screaming in a minute. Okay? Okay. Okay, let's go on with the statement. And this is why I had to tell John to sit down.
Requiring 20% emission reductions by 2020 is unrealistic and harmful. It is simply not enough time to deploy the carbon capture and storage and energy efficiency technologies we need, period. Our nation cannot survive without energy from coal, and any viable climate policy must solidify our future by focusing on technology to make coal cleaner faster. I will continue studying the bill and all of its implications for our state and the coal industry. This is by no means the defining word on climate legislation in the Senate. I remain adamant in my conviction not to support any bill that might threaten the economy, workers, or families across West Virginia. We should take the time to approach these issues with absolute care and diligence. They require nothing less.
I can hear the screaming all the way from Woy Woy to Fayette County, West Virginia, right now. That one sentence just absolutely makes me want to scream. I remain adamant in my conviction not to support any bill that might threaten the economy, workers, or families across West Virginia. Well, jumpin' Jehoshaphat J. That's the whole thing. The only way that we are ever going to strengthen the economy, help workers, and help families across West Virginia, and yea, verily, in Appalachia itself, is by ending, damn it, ending mountaintop removal. Because until such time as we do that, there will never, ever, 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 Jay Rockefeller, be anyone who wants to come here and do anything other than blow crap up. And this is West Virginia. It's not flippin' Texas, Jay. We ain't got that much left to blow up. Yeah, I watched the documentary, and I've been watching the documentary, and I get a little frustrated. Some real frustration last night watching the story of the creation of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Again, David Rockefeller, instrumental in that process. And, of course, that's mountains down in Tennessee and North Carolina. You'll notice that the areas that had a bunch of mining in it, in which the Rockefeller family had a considerable financial interest, we didn't quite get included within the park boundaries. Hell no! No. Bring some more dynamite, boys. Let's blow up. Let's enslave some more hillbillies and send them into the hole. I know, I'm being cranky, aren't I? But how hard is this to comprehend? Green jobs and green energy and all manner of commerce can come to Appalachia, but there's no way it's going to come to Appalachia as long as this place continues to be reduced to a toxic waste zone. God Almighty, most of this state is already a de facto Superfund site that no one quite wants to acknowledge. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. So I thought you would find some interest in that. So suffice to say that we got a lot of stuff to do this evening. We have more than enough to keep us busy for quite some time, I think. Yeah, see, I knew that'd get. I was just checking the chat room here. I knew that'd get John a little bit worked up. No, John, not with yours, I wouldn't. But yeah, that's me, and I'm cranky. So we got a couple of phones. Hey, you know the phone number, right? You've written it down by now. You've got it tattooed on the inside of your wrist, perhaps, for easy access. You want to get involved with the program, you know how to do it. The toll-free number, if you need us to carry the toll charges, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, bobkincaid@gmail.com. And, of course, you're welcome to hop into the conversation in the chat room. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. It's terribly, terribly easy and also terribly, terribly free. About 27 minutes before the hour, and we will go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
I think basically I'm one of those people that I think John D. would be, I think he would take one look at Jay Rockefeller and say, you're not a member of my family.
Well, something got watered down between that, because see, Jay's granddaddy was the son of John D., you know, the. And as was explained in the documentary, I guess he was in his 30s when he looked up and he said, you know, I don't want to do what Dad did. I think I'm just going to manage the family charities and try to do good in the world and not screw up anything any more than my family already has.
And he did. He forked over millions. And he passed that on down to his sons. Public service.
Yeah. I mean, one of his sons was Nelson, right?
Yeah.
And Winthrop?
Yep. And then
And John D. the Third.
Yeah. And then here comes Jay, who is basically, I'm sorry. He's just not worth it, not worth the pot.
But the thing is, where did it get? Well, I know where it got sideways. See, I can explain this, because if you look at John D. Rockefeller IV, my senator's biography, you will find that he graduated from Harvard with a degree in Asian languages and history. that he worked in the Kennedy administration with the Peace Corps, that after that he took a an assignment from VISTA, Volunteers in Service to America, sort of the domestic Peace Corps, and came to a little place called Emmons, West Virginia, in, I believe, Lincoln County. And he became enamored of this state and fell in love with its people. And you know what? I don't challenge that. I don't challenge the legitimacy or the honesty of that, because it's very easy to come here and fall in love with our people and our land. And early on, he ran for governor against the dirtiest SOB who has ever sat in the office, a guy by the name of Arch Moore. His daughter, who looks like him in a cheap wig, is now a member of Congress from West Virginia's 2nd District. Her name's Shelley Moore Capito. But anyway, he ran against Arch Moore, and it was at that time that mountaintop removal was first breathing its first little infantile breaths in Appalachia. And Jay Rockefeller looked at it, and he said, "Dear sweet God in heaven, this must end." And he got beat like he owed Arch Moore money. And from that moment to this, he has never said a cross word about mountaintop removal again. Because, of course, he was, yea, verily, taken up, yea, verily, unto that, yea, verily, high place. And he was shown the world and all its possessions. And the coal industry said, "It can all be yours, Jay. All you have to do is worship me." And he said, "Which foot do I kiss?"
And you see, that's the difference between his grandfather and him. His grandfather wouldn't have kissed anybody's.
Well, wasn't in a position to need to, because he wasn't trying to play politics. He was just trying to do good.
Exactly. If he'd have looked at that defeat and said, "Okay, fine, we're gonna just end this." And if he'd have started a nonprofit and focused the Rockefeller name and the Rockefeller prestige, he could have probably nipped it in the bud. But instead, he tried to play ball.
Well, I just got an email in from Lisa, and she sent me something. She said, "What I sent to Jay a few weeks ago when he started talking this trash." And she notes the original John D. wasn't exactly an angel. He started the public service partly to atone for his robber baronness, which is true. But she writes, "I worked for a Jay Rockefeller in the 1972 primary and general elections. It was the Jay Rockefeller that Ken Ward quoted today." Of course, Ken Ward over at the Brilliant Coal Tattoo blog at wvgazette.com. But Lisa quotes him and says, Jay Rockefeller said in 1972, quote, "We know that strip mining is tearing up the beauty of our state. We know that strip mining is not a good economic future for West Virginia and not a good economic future for our children. And we know that whatever advantage it has now, the damage that it leaves is a permanent damage." Lisa goes on and notes, "I left West Virginia in 1978 and was gone for 30 years because I, unlike you, was not independently wealthy and needed a job to live here. I am appalled that the Jay Rockefeller I knew has gone and apparently been replaced by someone who thinks that mountaintop removal, so much more destructive than the strip mining of the 1970s, is now vital to the economy. Mountaintop removal is a small part of coal production in this state, and coal itself is a smaller and smaller part of the economy. A plethora of studies have shown that the benefits are no longer worth the costs. We need to stop the mining that causes the worst damage and concentrate on diversifying the economy in southern West Virginia, as we have successfully done in other parts of the state." Driving back from the Marion County AFL-CIO picnic the back way Sunday, it was obvious that the area around some of our most productive northern mines was healthy and prosperous. Southern West Virginia could be, too, but not if we continue physically dismantling it. Wow, Lisa, thanks for that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But the thing is, somewhere along the line, the Jay Rockefeller who had any integrity became the Jay Rockefeller who I will take my lead from somebody who else who spoke to power recently. The Jay Rockefeller who bent over and sold his body and became a whore to the coal industry. Jay, we know what you are. The only question is, what's your price?
Well, but Susan, the thing that provides me with such a quandary and such a problem here is exactly what I described at the outset of this, and that is, how can a guy get something so right as he has on health care? And the thing is, he's no Johnny come lately to it. He's been talking this for decades. He's been getting it right. How can he get that so right and this so wrong if it's anything other than politically motivated? I can't bring myself to say that it's financially motivated, because, you know, if Jay Rockefeller started burning soaking wet mountains of $100 bills right now and did so for the rest of what I hope will be a long life for him, he would never be anything less than stinking rich.
No, he marches to the drum of power, and the people who provide who have the power and enable him to wield that power in Congress, the people who enable him to get elected, are the coal companies. Now, if they were the health companies, he would be selling us out there.
But wait. And I mean, I'm not arguing with you, Susan. But there's a dynamic here that I think needs to be addressed. And it's the same that applies, for instance, to my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal. When the election time comes around, the coal bosses actively inveigh against these men. It's not the coal industry that's electing them. And it's not their employees either. For starters, if you want to talk about a voting block, the voting block of florists, you know, florists, the voting block of florists in the state of West Virginia is bigger than the voting block of mountaintop removal workers. The voting block of Walmart workers is bigger than the voting block of mountaintop removal workers. Jesus criminy, there's hardly a voting block in this state that's not larger than the United Mine Workers. They are not the BSD that they were in generations past, because precisely because of how they allowed themselves to be pushed around by the likes of Don Blankenship. For the most part, Susan, they are radicalized, and they don't like to vote. You call one of them a liberal, you'll get one across your face.
I ain't no liberal. I'm a proud union man.
Oh, jeez Louise.
I'm a UMWA miner.
Oh, God.
You know, that's why I say that the UMWA has ceded its proud history to the activists who are now working to save West Virginia, just like the early UMWA did. Because the early UMWA was working to save the working class. Well, guess what? So are we. Because we want there to be a working class in West Virginia in the next generation. But you know what, Susan? There can't be a working class in West Virginia in the next generation if there's not a West Virginia to work in. Not yelling at you.
Oh, I don't blame you for yelling. I make a career out of yelling at the TV. I scream on a regular basis.
Boy, go and get me the Elvis gun. I'm going to shoot the TV again.
It's, God. I did have one minor good thing. I found myself cheering the TV the other day. I sat there and watched Alan Grayson named the 900-pound gorilla in the room, and I just sat there and grinned and cheered and grinned some more. And then today I got on the web and found his website, and I sent him money. I don't got very much money, but I sent that man money.
Sure.
He's in Florida.
Right, and he, and you know what? He's going to, after what he's done, he is going to need every dollar.
You bet you're bippy. That's why I sent him money.
And bless her, and hey, let's throw out a bless her heart to Nancy Pelosi real quick.
Yeah.
Again, we've given, I've given her enough grief over the years, but I loved how she responded to this whole thing. She said,
and I called her office and said, hey, good for you.
In response to the little, the hissy spit that, the Repiglickens threw over, Congressman Grayson's comments, Nancy Pelosi said, apparently Republicans hold Democrats to a higher standard than they hold members of their own party. There's no reason for Mr. Grayson to apologize. If anyone should apologize, everyone should apologize.
Yeah. And, hey, I got this thing with Grayson really hits home to me because I have literally been told to go home and die.
Yeesh.
Honest to God, I have been told when I told somebody that I had a condition that will kill me if it's not treated by life support, they have said, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do for you. In effect, go home and die.
Oh, you're just going to love the story I've got a little bit later. I'd sit down and strap in if I were you, Susan.
Oh, I'm already sat down, strapped in, and ready to scream. There is one thing I do want to mention.
Sure.
Besides the earthquake in Indonesia, please, if you can, send some money to the people in Samoa. They got hit with the tidal wave.
They did indeed, a tsunami.
Yep. And it didn't do them much good. Let me put it that way.
Seldom does.
Nope.
There's just not. Frankly, there's no such thing as a fun tsunami.
No. We had warning watches, advisories here up on the Oregon coast. It never got here.
Really?
And they said, oh, yeah. Anytime there is a big quake out in the Indian Ocean or out in the Pacific, they immediately put up advisories. There have been cases. There was one in the 50s or the 60s where some people on the beach, this was before the warning system went up, people were sleeping on the beach and they were killed when a tsunami came in, and they never did find them.
I got to get out and see that. See, I got to see that neck of the woods someday. I just got to.
Yeah, we have.
This, honest to God, just to shift gears a little bit, this National Parks documentary is driving me absolutely batty.
I've been watching it. It's just great. I loved it. It's just,
The people involved and the stories told, the couple that traveled that I saw last night, the couple, that, what were their names, Gurky, that traveled to all the parks. It was just, heartwarming.
Yeah, and the couple that went down the Grand Canyon.
Oh, yeah. Deliverance early 20th century style.
Yeah, I just, oh, man, this is just.
But Agnes and I happened to be sitting there watching the repeat, and I'd already seen the Gurky couple segment, and but it came to the end of it with that last letter right at the very end of the episode, and
you just sit there and drip.
Oh, Agnes was bawling like a baby. I can only say this when she's out of the room, and I know she's out of earshot because she likes everybody to think that she's tough as nails, but she's a marshmallow.
Well, hey, most women are. That's just.
You'd never get her to agree with you in public, Susan.
I sat there and bawled, because here's this woman, this lady who spent her whole marriage going around. And then she had to take her last trip alone. And I think I'm going to bolt again.
Well, in that case, I will move to another call.
I won't bawl again.
But
I, it, it, the whole series is just fabulous. I've yet to see a documentary by Ken Burns that isn't.
You know, I was thinking the other day, and I don't know if you ever got around to reading it or not, but it certainly is worth the effort. I was thinking the other day what a magnificent thing it would be for Ken Burns to make a documentary out of Jeff Biggar's The United States of Appalachia.
Ew.
Wow.
Hey, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, and you want to talk about a visual medium. Those beautiful mountains.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Susan, have a wonderful evening, and thanks for all the input. I appreciate it. We got the show off to a great start, conversationally speaking.
Oh, and by the way, if anybody wishes to toss a few pennies Alan Grayson's way, go to the Head On Radio show post for today.
Okay.
And there is a link to his campaign website.
Okay, great.
So that they can go click on that and then they can contribute if they wish.
First class idea.
Wish, that's fine too.
No, that's a first class idea. All right. Well, Susan, have a good evening, and we will talk soon.
That's great, and my love to Agnes and the kids.
All right, thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Yeah, you have to admire Congressman Grayson. I really want him to sign on to Medicare for All, though. I need him to take that next step. He's not my congressman, but you know what? We need leadership wherever we can get it right now, and we need it. Rather, dare I say it, desperately. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Brian from New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
How are you? I want to first agree with you about my fellow New Hampshireite and the New Hampshire's greatest filmmaker ever of any kind of film, documentary, feature film, whatever, Ken Burns, who I believe he still lives around Walpole, New Hampshire. It's kind of in the central to north part of the western part of New Hampshire, the state there, not too far from the Vermont border. But he's done some so not just the Civil War, you're right about it. I've got to see that National Parks documentary there. But, you know, he made a great documentary, and the right wing just pummeled the poor guy again about the Negro Leagues and baseball.
Oh, the baseball one and this.
That was the greatest sports documentary.
Did you see the jazz one, Brian?
No, I didn't see the jazz one. I'm not enough of a musicologist. I love Beethoven and Shostakovich and the classical, but I guess I'm not having enough of a hepcat for the jazz.
Nah, this was, but see, it's still history, and you just drink it in.
Yeah, cultural history.
You owe yourself the jazz documentary.
And you know, you would see America would not know about our kids if they were even halfway decently educated in history, including sports history, which there's a local Republican guy who was a friend with my father, who retired in Florida. He's a state senator here in New Hampshire, but he's an all-time Boston Braves fan when they used to be the Boston Braves.
Oh, my goodness.
The most underrated pitcher in baseball history, Warren Spahn, was the leading pitcher for the Boston Braves.
Spahn insane in a day of rain.
Yep. Warren Spahn, and like you, I like the kind words you had to say about Ted Williams the other day. He gave up, like, for his own personal belief in defending his nation there, and in serving in the Marine Air Force in both World War II and the Korean War. Ted Williams gave up a huge chunk of his career, and he.
We had, you know what, Brian? For baseball fans, there's no way you can not say that we simply do not know what the record books would look like
right. Had
Ted Williams been allowed to naturally play out his career.
And absolutely. About one other thing, though, too, about how war gets in the way of these things here with Ted Williams' career, but what about race, too, where in that Ken Burns special in the Negro Leagues, he showed the greatest power hitter, I would still say, in all of baseball history, at least in America, the catcher Josh Gibson. Yep. I believe he was the greatest power hitter that this country's ever produced. Babe Ruth, all of them are great, great New York Yankees. And there's some of the other latest guys of latest years. Barry Bonds, I liked his father, Bobby Bonds Jr., who didn't use steroids. But, you know, they've had some great numbers they had up, but you wonder if it's really natural. But Josh Gibson was 100% natural, the greatest catcher and the greatest power hitter, I believe, in professional baseball history.
Well, see, Brian, without a doubt, Josh Gibson was absolutely astonishing. And just the talent that existed in the Negro Leagues, the Kansas City Monarchs, the Homestead Grays, amazing talent. And but one of the other, I love old baseball history, and I've got one of those books. It's a huge thick thing, Brian. It would drive you absolutely bananas.
My father's got three or four huge baseball encyclopedias.
They update it every so often. The baseball encyclopedia, and it's every statistic and
Bible.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you go and you look up, say, I often do this when the Cy Young Award comes out, and they start talking about what an Iron Man somebody was because he threw six complete games this year.
Yeah.
And then I go and I look up Denton Trough Young.
Oh yeah.
And there's a reason that the Cy Young Award is the Cy Young Award, but it's not just Cy Young, Denton Trough Young, it's Christy Mathewson.
Despite his racism, you got to give Ty Cobb the credit for his great career. He was a great competitor. Him and Honus Wagner were always dueling, I believe, on the diamond there. Ty Cobb.
Oh, and yeah, and right, I get an absolute case of the red ass about Shoeless Joe Jackson. Oh, I'm bad geek.
Oh yeah, but now you were talking about the. I just got an email about this has been a huge storm that's been the weather and the earthquakes. The God love them, the people in the in Indonesia there, Sumatra, I believe, is the second most populous part of Indonesia. It's the most populous Muslim country on the planet too. And that was, remember, the late 2004 tsunami that hit there and hit places like Sri Lanka and the coast of India. And those Bible thumping people were all over there, where people they don't need our Bibles. They're Muslim or Hindu or Buddhist believers or their own animist belief. They don't need us to hold that up.
No, they need food, clothing, and shelter. That Maslowian the hierarchy of needs thing.
Yeah. Well, I just got an email from the Catholic Relief Services, and apparently this whole the whole horrible loss of life. The Katrina, the Philippines, happened over this past weekend as Typhoon Katsana slammed in the country, killed hundreds, left massive destruction. Hundreds of thousands, at least, are homeless. And now the typhoon continued on to Vietnam and Cambodia, as if those war exhausted nations haven't lost enough human beings. That dead peasant in Cambodia and Vietnam is just as precious a human life to my. I'm a fallen Catholic, but I believe the Catholic Relief Services have a pretty good record of not trying to proselytize in time.
Yeah, of having a sense of priority about these things.
Yeah. Letting people have their right to water and to breathe again and to eat again. It's an important thing.
Sorry, no water till you say 16 Hail Marys. No, they don't do that anymore.
No, and I'm going to send out one thin dime is about what I can afford right now, but I'm going to try to make it a thick dime in the next week or so. And also, I did want to say I did get your official Horn Radio head-on radio baseball cap.
Oh, did you really?
I did get one of those, but I don't like to wear that when I'm driving a car. You know, it's like my last name isn't Murphy, but it's Brian Murphy's Log. I don't want to have a cap that says head on.
No. There are certain karmic laws attached to the wearing of the merchandise.
But to a demonstration or something like where it, I'll be glad to. And also, I went to that JonathanTurley.org last night. The website, he is a great writer for a lawyer, too.
Yeah, surprisingly cogent for a writer.
Very witty, too. I mean, he's really, he's got his own, and it just, I don't know if I agree with him. I guess even though I'm a fallen Catholic, I'm not enough to say, I'm too much of an agnostic to say I'm an atheist. I wouldn't say I'm not going to bring up Bertrand Russell as a way to get better dates on a Friday.
I don't know that anybody's ever gotten a better date bringing up Bertrand Russell, but yeah, I know what you mean.
But also, and I wanted to say that what I couldn't think of last night was, in comparing to General Stanley McChrystal, that he is an interesting guy. But in Afghanistan, there the leading commander there, the guy in Vietnam, I was thinking too, basically has the same role that McChrystal has taken over in Afghanistan is John Paul Vann, And the famous book is A Bright Shiny Lie, John Paul Vann, an American in Vietnam, and released in about 1989 by Neil Sheehan of the New York Times.
Okay, I have heard that name, yes.
Yeah, and he it was a great story. He was finally killed. He was the highest-ranking civilian commander in South Vietnam then. June 1872, President Nixon posthumously awarded Vann the Medal of Freedom, and also he got the highest, the Distinguished Service Cross as the only civilian serving in Vietnam to earn that. He was the highest ranking. He had the general's powers, basically. He was a commander then, like this Miss Crystalline is now in Afghanistan. But like I said last night, we have learned from this. If we're an adult nation of people, we should have learned from this that we do not need, that we cannot afford to either. That we need to be spending the money on the humanitarian aid for these people right now. Our troops should be bringing in food supplies to Indonesia and not more ammo into Afghanistan. To these people there, and they would have a mission they could really believe in. But I want to say I agree with what you were saying here, and it's so great to hear. You know, last night I know a lady called up after me, a lady from Florida. I forget.
Juanita.
Yeah, she's charming. That southern drawl. I can't do a good imitation of a down home or a.
Now you kind of got to grow up with it, Brian.
My Irish brogue even is not going to match anybody who's have that ancestry in the South. I'm going to talk way too fast for that. But she was talking about that. You know, in the 50s, you know, that's why I don't want to make it. I don't have an idealized viewpoint of the 50s. Even I was born in late 1958, but I don't have. I know there was a lot of things horrible. Like she mentioned herself, the Rosenbergs and the McCarthyite. That no good. Drunk on his own power, so-called senator.
Well, Nixon himself and his HUAC, you know.
Oh yeah, there was a horrible time. But I think what has brought on all the latest tragedies in this country is because it's the same cabal. I think are loosely connected. It's in that latest Loose Change documentary too. It's if you go to microcinema.com, folks. It goes back to the same. Kind of fascist and war profiteers. It goes right back to the Vietnam War in November 22nd, 1963, and that poor lad that was killed, the first non-WASP American president, and, you know, like my fellow half-Irish American president there, Barack Obama, I pray first of all for him to have a safe and healthy 8 years, because he's got to be better than anything that has an R in front of its name there as an alternative in 2012. But I'd like to go back in time. One of my favorite movies of all time, Bob, is the original Blob movie, The Blob. It's 1958, starring Steve McQueen. He was a 28-year-old trying to play a high school kid.
Oh my, yeah.
Yeah, and that's it. But the latest movie that John Carpenter, he's a good filmmaker, but the remake was nothing as great as it was set in a real small town, Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. The Blob, directed by Jack Harris. I have the DVD directed by Irving Yeworth, who he makes Christian films with that guy. But the thing is, I always think of time travel. If we could go back to avoid September 11th, or go back to avoid that great man being killed in November 1963, then I go up, I read a lot of physics by Dr. Michio Kaku. He's a professor at City University of New York, and he's the master, he's better than any physics professor you can imagine at Harvard or anywhere else, too, for that matter. But thinking of time travel, actually, it's much harder. They propose to go back in time than it would be to go forward in time. But I think of I believe it still fits right in with my Christian belief, Bob, that this universe or multiverse, whatever you want to call it, is 17 billion years old, or even if it was 17 billion light years old, that would just show God as being that much greater as she, he, or it is as a creative force.
And see, I share some of that with you, Brian, because I'm not going to sit here and say, no, there ain't.
Right.
Because, because you can't prove a negative.
Right.
But you also can't empirically prove that there is. So you know the only way we can honestly deal with any of this is to admit that it is not susceptible to the intellectual proof and acknowledge faith and belief for what it is. And that's not to say that it's bad per se. It's just not knowledge.
Right. Of course, what the right wing does in this country, these right wing Christians, I put a dollar sign in the yes and Christian too, for they're so much in favor of the Iraq war and Afghanistan, that they're fighting the infidel. We have our own Christian Taliban, of course, in this country that we have to keep a watch out for. But where they say that, you know, that so much of Western civilization, human civilization, is built on not just the Christianity in Europe and America, but all over the world, Islam, they preserve some of the great Jewish texts and some of the great Christian texts. When we were going through our dark ages in Europe, were preserved by the Muslims.
They preserve the Odyssey and the Iliad, yeah. Yes.
The great library at Alexandria in Egypt, yeah. It's so ridiculous the way we tried to make 1.3 billion people, the Muslim population of the world, as suspects after September 11th, and after the 19 foreign hijackers did that, according to the official story. Anyway, now 300 million Americans as well are basically treated as suspects.
Have you
to prop up an unqualified president for 8 years? I believe it all was.
Without a doubt. Have you seen these stories? I got to find this thing now. John Fox sent it to me. And by the way, if you haven't tuned in for John Fox's show on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, you're missing a treat. Among other things, it's live conversation radio on the weekend, which is kind of in the talk radio universe. It's sort of rare as hen's teeth. John sent me this story last week. And then lo and behold, I saw I don't know if you want to call this a ripple effect or what, John sent me this story, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was something like The Woman Who Changed My Mind About Stoning. And of course, it's offered somewhat tongue-in-cheek. I'm looking for it now, because what it is, it's an account of a woman who... Who had a fit on an airline flight?
Right.
Here it is. This is from the suicidegirls.com website. Not safe for work. Yeah, here it is. And it centers on, and this goes with your thesis of the demonization of an entire segment of the world population. This is the story of 35-year-old mother Lee Robbins, Brian.
Uh-huh.
Okay, she's from Virginia.
Okay.
You know, they always are. These lunatics never seem to be from north of the Mason-Dixon line. I'm sure there are some, and I know you've probably met some, but
we call, like, New Hampshireites like to call people in Maine maniacs for a reason, but that's not. It's also because they allow a certain someone to live in Kennebunkport. He basically has bought up the entire town's.
Can't they go ahead and move to Bolivia or Paraguay or whatever already?
We're gonna go. If we had a naturally acting Congress that with impeachment process, I think they would be down there by now. Yeah,
I know. So I guess a couple of weeks ago, this Lee Robbins lady was at the San Diego airport, and she was waiting for her flight to Chicago.
Uh-huh.
She's got children. They're 4 and 9-year-olds.
Okay.
And the writer says we can also assume that they are morons. So she's standing in line, and she speaks to a Middle Eastern man standing in front of her. And he tells her that he's in the army and he's leaving for Iraq.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But she notices that he speaks perfect English and doesn't have an accent. So now she starts getting nervous because of his appearance, because he wasn't clean-shaven and he didn't have a military haircut like the skinheads in the military that she's all the time seeing in the movies like.
Boy, you're just talking about football last night there, Bob. There's a great University of Michigan wide receiver who, you know, there's a huge Arabic-American population there around Dearborn and Michigan.
Oh, sure, and Flint.
The guy talks like he's a Beaver Cleaver, an all-American kid there. Yeah.
Well, so it gets worse for Lee Robbins because 6 other men come up and join the guy that she thinks doesn't look sufficiently Army, and they're speaking Arabic, Brian. Okay?
A lot of our soldiers speak Spanish, I would say. They were.
Yeah. So Lee Robbins starts getting really nervous. And she goes over and cakes her kids and goes over to security and says, there's a bunch of scary brown-skinned men over there speaking that Arab language. And the security people tell her, lady, it's no big deal. Okay, they've been through security, they've been searched, they've been screened just like you were. Then an official from American Airlines comes over to try to comfort her and tell her that
they're
everything's okay.
Needed as an Arab language interpreter.
Yeah, those folks are handy if you're going to right, if you're going to have a war in Iraq, those kind of people are kind of handy.
That's right.
So then she writes, she says, I was still nervous. Maybe I was overreacting, but you think about it every day. Someone can still get through security. All I wanted was for them to talk to them. All I could think of was 9/11.
No.
Okay.
See, if they have been blonde Bosnian Muslim adherents who actually...
She'd have never known.
...the lady would have helped him onto the plane.
So by then it's 11 o'clock at night Pacific time, and they get her on the American Airlines flight. She's on the plane, and she gets on the plane with the scary-looking brown-skinned men who don't have the common decency to speak Merkin. And she,
that's
and
not
she,
really English, that's true.
Right, and she goes toddling up to the cockpit and starts telling the flight crew about the scary brown men who are not talking English. They're talking that Arab language.
And Glenn Beck's aunt or something like that.
You just about swear, wouldn't you? So she's having this fit. She's having this hissy, all because one of the men walked past her to go to the lavatory.
No.
And then she says that he looked at her the wrong way, and she was terrified, and she started having a fit and demanded, Brian, that they turn the plane around and let her off. But she only did it after it had left the gate and was already taxiing out to the runway.
Oh, my God. Yes, people like this and such, I don't even know if it's real paranoia or fear on her part. They've been coddled by this right-wing media since at least September 11th, 2001. It's nonsense. Like we're just saying that the American Army needs a lot more Arab Americans to be interpreters over there in Iraq right now if they really want a lasting peace or anything like a democracy.
Yeah, because among other things, we fired all the gay ones.
That's right. That's right, they did. And that's,
So wait, we haven't gotten to the end of this yet. This is absolutely horrifying, Brian. So
okay.
She starts having a fit. And she demand, and the plane turns around, goes back to the gate, they call the cops, and you would think that at this point the cops would come and take her away, right?
Right.
No.
Oh my God.
They took the seven scary Arab dudes off too, who'd already cleared security.
Oh God.
Who'd already been thoroughly screened. And they were re-questioned, and they didn't understand why they were being re-questioned.
Right.
They were publicly humiliated, they were treated like criminals. And then they did. And then, as they had previously noted, it was determined that they posed no threat. And guess what they were? They were Iraqi American contractors working for a company called Defense Training Systems, who were in the job of training U.S. Marines about how to behave in Iraq, and they were doing so at Camp Pendleton in San Diego.
Oh my God! If that's not vital to our military at this stage, then nothing is. My God, that's disgusting. That sounds even worse than the Lackawanna 6, whatever it was, they were arrested in New York State. And apparently they had broken up a couple of plots that were by individuals that were, they might have been just individual malcontents or something like that, or that the FBI did set up one or two groups or people with the phony bomb device and phony bomb firing device. Like you covered that. That's the Obama administration did that. Well, basically, they didn't sound any huge alarms about that. Didn't alarm the public. Didn't tell them to be on guard at NFL football games or college football. That they rolled up these people right away. And what they're doing with our email, Bob, and all of our telephone conversation, the NSA, they should be able to do that at this point. If we don't have a Fourth Amendment, we should at least have some kind of safety like that.
And well, it goes on. This is astonishing. One of the men's name was David Al-Watan.
Okay.
He fled Iraq in 1991. His mama was killed by the Saddam Hussein regime.
Oh, damn. Yeah.
There's a pull quote in the story, and he said, of people like Lee Robbins, while they sit in their air conditioning, I was out in the desert helping to save Marines' lives. I'm an American. I love this country. I would die for it.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, Lee Robbins says, I know they're upset and they have every right to be, but I was protecting my tiny little family. How can you overreact when it's your cheering?
Well, they speak, that's all they speak is Arabic too. When the Bush crime family goes with it, they've been going off with the bin Ladens for decades now, according to Larry Klayman at Judicial Watch. And George Bush was meeting with a close cousin, a close relative of bin Laden on September 11th. That very morning, watching the Twin Towers fall, what about those Arabic speakers that are actually, they keep the well-funded, Wahhabist, anti-American religious schools, so-called religious schools, in full operation? What about those Arabic, speaking people? She has no concern about them. They're the real power, but she's not afraid of them, right?
Exactly. Oh, we have so far to go in this country.
Yeah, we do. I just think it's, at this point, it's like Afghanistan talking about McChrystal. We don't have time for him to be another war hero or another. He's already proven that well by the story there in Newsweek. But what we have here is the whole thing. There is apparently next to no or zero al-Qaeda in Afghanistan any longer. They're all in Pakistan, the world's only Islamic nuclear power who's supposed to be our close ally. But the fact remains, our original reason for going there, according to the official story of September 11th, was to root out and destroy all of those al-Qaeda training camps. But Mike Malloy brought it up last week there, Bob, very well. Where do you go to a training camp in Afghanistan and the sticks out there and the where there's nothing but rocks and sand and learn how to hijack a 767 airliner with a ceramic knife or a box cutter? What do you learn that kind of thing in Afghanistan? That kind of action.
Well, those are the questions that remain insufficiently answered, yea verily, unto this day, Brian.
It's the same lies, and like they did, like I say before, Saddam Hussein, he could have been an ally, a secular ally against bin Laden, but they wanted his oil fields, they wanted, Dick Cheney and the rest, but they tried to come up with this phony story that he had terrorist training camps, Richard Pearl did, in this place called Salmon Pak in Iraq or something. They were training the same as all of our security services do, the FBI, like they were said, were having war games on September 11th. That they trained for all this type of thing all the time, as was Saddam Hussein's people. Some were dressed up as the Islamic terrorists, some as the so-called good guys, at least from their standpoint.
Oh, you mean kind of like what the FBI does at the well-renowned Hogan's Alley?
Yeah. What's that?
That's the FBI training center where, you got good guys, and you got a whole city set up, and you got good guys, and you got bad guys, and they... Right.
Yeah, those FBI guys that are training, that are acting as the bad guys, they're not real criminals. Why Richard Pearl he couldn't see that in the Salmon Pack training with the Iraqis, but we were whipped up for war, our people. But we have to stop being such children. The real threat to human life, and we just seen it happen. Well, you just brought it out with the first story there about the earthquakes and the tidal waves. For God's sakes, I don't know what that would be like. I know when talking about when I was a little kid. Apparently, my family they lived in I was born in New Jersey, and there's a place called Long Island Beach or something. It's like a little peninsula that was hit by a rare tidal wave in 1959. And the poor police chief there, a lad there, he tried to save as many people as he could. He was finally caught up and drowned in it, but he saved like over 40 or 50 human lives there. And that's, I'm sure it's the same type of human tragedies going on on an even bigger scale in Indonesia right now. And yet all of our money and fortune is all in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, at least Obama, he's gotten rid of the Star Wars program. I think maybe it's finally done. I think...
Well, but if we learned anything, and God, Brian, I hope we do, if we learned anything from the Reagan era to the present, it is there is never a stupid right-wing weapon system that cannot be resurrected.
Oh, God,
I'm serious, Brian, because
I know you are right. You're right.
That whole Star Wars the stupidity was cooked up in the half-eaten brain of Ronald Reagan.
Another great book here, and this is another somebody who really was a New Jersey writer, Bob, here, is you can get it at buzzflash.com, is The Man Who Sold the World, Ronald Reagan and the Betrayal of Main Street America by William Kleinknecht. I can't pronounce his name. It's either German or a Jewish name. I'm sorry, I can't. But he's a crime reporter, a veteran reporter for the New York Star-Ledger. And just the review of it, I've been wanting to get it. I'm going to try to pick it up very soon. He just how he sold out the he was so influenced by these Milton Friedman and these Ayn Randian, as you've spoken of the libertarian, that just everything has been his famous nine words, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. Well, they were from the government and they helped a lot of people in liberated France in 1944. They helped a lot of people in maybe perhaps it was a good war, the first Gulf War in Kuwait in 1991. The Tennessee Valley Project, when it was government run, it improved the wages of people in that Tennessee and those parts of the country until a Republican businessman took it over.
I grew up in it, Brian.
Yeah, and then the wages went way down, and they took all the resources, and they took over. They privatized that, and then the living standards went back down again when they were rising exponentially almost under Roosevelt in the 30s. This is, government is not the evil that Ronald Reagan tried to make it out to be. Healthcare is a right. It's not a plot by Joseph Stalin. That we've got to grow up as a nation, Bob. But I'll let you go. And I, like I said, you could tell Juanita that I probably wouldn't like the 50s as much as we have made some gains since then, at least in race relations. But I heard some other story with it that there's some schools, some parts of the country, they're more racially divided than they were going back to the 1950s, apparently.
Yes, I believe that's true. And when
in a climate like this where they're getting away with joking about killing Barack Obama, I can understand why that is. It is so, we have so much growing up to do with just basic human civility. That's what really, it's not the Ten Commandments that should rule our lives. It's just the basic, everybody, human beings all over the world have their different religions and different ideas, but it's the same universal idea, right and wrong, of helping somebody without having no carrot in the stick approach, or being that there's some kind of price for helping people recovering from a tsunami or typhoon. We have to get back to that basic human decency. We've lost that. I believe a lot of it has come since Ronald Reagan took office there. But Barack Obama, he may still bring it back. We got to give him 8 years to do it, though.
I don't see a viable more liberal replacement for him on the horizon. I know that that's been mentioned. I think Keith Olbermann mentioned it, as a matter of fact, that he would face a challenger in the primaries in 2012 if he didn't start getting serious about beating the backsides of these.
Well, that could happen. That's a good thing, though, too. That's how our twin party system there. But I believe, on the Republican side, there's just nobody out there that's that could begin to, he needs at least 8 years, probably more than that, to begin to clean up what the twice not elected.
And see, that's what scares the daylights out of me, Brian. I know you need to go, but okay. We've got, if we get 8 years of Barack Obama, and hopefully in his second term, it's the second term when they start actually, if they get a second term, then they can start trying to do something. The sad, sorry business with Bill Clinton is that he never really got the chance in his second term because he had to deal with that good for nothing, the dead from the neck up or pig licking Congress. But then you see the repetition of a trend that's really, really annoying. And that is a Democrat comes in and starts trying to fix things that are broken, gets things back, gets the wheels back on the vehicle and gets it rolling down the road again, or refills the treasury or however you care to describe it. And then the American people, who apparently have a memory about the same caliber as Pete Moss, get some blithering idiot who comes along and says, I'm a compassionate conservative, or I want to make him It's Morning in America again, Nancy. And they come in and the bastards rob the place again, right down to pulling the nails off, the hanger nails out of the walls for 8 years. And then another Democrat has to come along and fix it. And I'm really tired of that process.
And that's how George W. Bush got away with 8 years with this so-called Securities and Exchange Commission. He basically ordered them off of any regulation of Wall Street. And this, he put somebody like this former congressman, this deadhead named Christopher Cox, as head of the SEC. And I read some report from earlier this year from Christopher Cox talking about, well, we should have caught the Bernie Madoff scandal a lot sooner. But the, his wrongdoings, you know, have to remember, they go back to years before I took office here. He starts spreading the blame around so he doesn't get any of the blame. But most of that $50 billion that Madoff stole, virtually all of it, was under Christopher Cox's tenure as Securities and Exchange Commissioner. That's what they're the
exactly.
You can't let them get away with.
Right, and remember all the good things that happened out of the recovery, and the return to economic normalcy after following the Second World War. You know, that's all the function of FDR followed by
right.
Harry Truman, and the economic expansion and the great peacetime economy that we had under Eisenhower. You can't fairly attribute that to Eisenhower, Brian.
Right. And also, I want to say that these Republicans, with their latest lie, they're trying to say, in the New York Times, today's paper, the edition, auto sales fall back as the cash for clunker program ends. And in September, the auto sales dropped way back down again from the cash for clunker program and the sales in July and August. And what did they give to Wall Street for its bailout? Something like, you know, it could be well into the 8 or 9 trillions or more. Of dollars, but yet the cash for clunkers at most, I believe it's $3 to $5 billion. That's something that was really helping Main Street and in helping the environment. You're talking about the phonies there with their clean coal nonsense there. This is the same thing people were buying. Almost all of them were bought new, you know, the Japanese or American, whatever, the alternative energy cars and high mileage cars. And if why don't they keep that going at least until the end of 2009, the Cash for Clunkers program is what something, and along with that, a $12 nationwide minimum wage would be something that would really bring the country back like FDR was doing in the 30s. That's what we need, Bob. I know Barack Obama's, he's too much of a Harvard gentleman for these people, and maybe that's what.
Oh, you're tapping into something, Brian. And I tell you what, we'll
bring out that even that Rahm Emanuel can help him with that. That streetwise Chicago outlook on things, he can. That's how you got to deal with these, like somebody in a dark alley. That's how you got to deal with a Republican in any kind of healthcare or an insurance company on any type of healthcare so-called reform. But I always pray for the best anyway. I'll let you go.
All right, Brian, you have a good evening, and thanks for a great conversation.
You too. Go Mountaineers.
Hey, they're going to be kicking off here shortly.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
That was just a wonderful conversation, and we will keep things rolling. Hey, welcome
Hi,
to the
Bob.
Program. Well, hey, Juanita, I guess he conjured you, didn't he?
No. I'm sorry if I offended him. I wasn't.
Oh no, you didn't. No, you didn't. No, you didn't offend Brian. No.
Well, I wasn't talking about him per se. I've heard other people say, "Oh, those were just wonderful times," you know, and. You know, I think the history of our country is kind of like professional football. We never get it right.
Well, look, Juanita, the fact of the matter is, you know, Harry Truman made a choice. What was it? The 1952 election cycle?
That's right. You're talking about when Eisenhower?
Yeah, Harry Truman made a choice not to run again. He could
right.
have.
Yeah.
He could, yeah, he absolutely could have. Mm-hmm. But Harry Truman was sick of being president. And, you know, I always, Harry Truman was a flawed human being, just like any of the rest of us. But there's something admirably grounded in middle America about Harry Truman. I love that story about how the minute he was done being president, that he got in his own car that had his own suitcases in the back of it.
Mm-hmm.
He put Bess in the front seat and Margaret in the back seat, got behind the wheel, left Washington, D.C., and drove home to Independence, Missouri.
Yeah, yeah. He was a real person.
He was, and I have never heard anybody put this forward, but I think it's a fair argument that had Harry Truman been president in that 1952 cycle, 52 to 56,
yeah.
The economy
well,
would have been the economy would have been the same as it was under Eisenhower.
Mm-hmm.
You know that peacetime expansion. You know, the greatest union membership that the country has ever known coincided with that expanding peacetime economy. And that was, I believe, 33% of the workforce of America was unionized back then. And I don't see anything to suggest that it would have been otherwise with a Truman presidency as opposed to, you know, dear old Ike. You know, and bless the Democrats' poor pointy little heads. You got the guy who won the war in Europe, who at the last minute decides he would have run as a Republican or a Democrat. He just couldn't decide which, and eventually landed on being a Republican because somehow it better fit his Midwestern values.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Democrats ran who? A brilliant man. A genius of a human being, Adlai Stevenson, who was about as electable compared to Dwight D. Eisenhower as, oh, I don't know, Michael Dukakis.
Not that, no. Please, I don't know.
But, you know, what Brian says about thinking about time travel and if only we could change things, how many times have you wondered, Juanita, what would happen if you could just stop what happened in November in Dallas in 1963? What would this nation have been?
It just changed the world, really. It changed our country. And the people, you know, the Democrats that we had in the South, most of them, they were the Republicans of today. You know, the right wing. They were very right wing. And they didn't even want to be seen in the same room with John Kennedy.
Oh, no. Exactly.
They did not want to be in the same room with him.
And the reason they're like the Republicans today is because after the signing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, when Lyndon Johnson said, we have lost the South, the Democratic Party has lost the South for a generation, which turned out to be very, very true, you know, the reason that the Democrats then are like the Republicans now is because it's the same bunch.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And to me, I said when, you know, I was watching, I used to watch soap operas, and I was watching As the World Turns when that came on. And I went out, and my daddy had a nursery, outside nursery, you know, shrubbery. And I went out, and I said, Daddy, they've shot Kennedy. I said, those Ku Klux Klan did it. That's what I felt, because I don't care what anybody says, he was fighting for equal rights. And that was what really capped it off for the people that in the South that I knew had voted against him just because he was Catholic. When he started really fighting for equal rights, they said, well, we were right. We were right. And I felt that. I felt like that they had something to do with, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was a mob. I don't know. But, you know, but anyhow, probably we'll never know for sure, but it just changed our country.
It changed our national character.
And he was getting some power. I really believe that if he'd have lived and been able to run, I believe he would have won by a landslide, because some of the people that thought that he couldn't be president, including Harry Truman. Harry Truman thought he didn't have enough experience. And he said he was wrong, you know, after he'd been in there, you know, while Harry Truman came and said he was very proud of him, you know, that he was wrong. But he was, and I think, you know, that they a lot of people knew that. And he would have gotten so much done for the people. I really believe that. And it's like they just want to tear everything away from we the people, everything that will help, just like the people in what is it now, in the Acorn. Look at all, now, if they're going to go after them, well, please, for goodness sake, go after Bush and Cheney and all those rotten people, including, and especially, Karl Rove.
You know what? I think we're going to, Juanita, I'm not kidding. I'm not being a smart aleck. I think we're going to have to start and of course every one of these programs is recorded and archived, but we need to start pulling out Juanita's moment of clarity. Because you have these little gems periodically, Juanita, that just sort of distill everything down to 100 proof honesty. And my God, there's one of them. Yeah, while we're investigating, if we're going to mount a humongous investigation of Acorn, for the love of God, let's go ahead and get a twofer and get the investigation started on Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, that whole filthy crowd while we're at it. What do you say? That's beautiful, Juanita.
Yeah, thank you. Well, and then, you know, I called Grayson's office today, and... You know, I talked to this gentleman. He let me just talk and talk, you know, and I called. I tried to call both numbers, one in Washington and one in Orlando. He is from Orlando. And I tried to call, and the lines were just busy, busy, busy. And along about a little afternoon, I thought, well, I'm going to try again. And I tried. The one in Washington was still busy, and the one in Florida was this gentleman answered. And I said, I think you might have had a lot of calls today. And I said, every time I tried to call your line, I was busy. He said, oh, yes, we've had a lot of calls. And I just want to thank him. And I said, we on the, you know, on the left wing and you know, the liberal side, we feel like we've been hung out to dry half the time. I just really thanked him for that, you know, and I said, it's like the little article that was in Buzz Flash this morning.
Yeah, I read
that. One time we got it, you know, and we're just so thrilled. And then we get kicked down again, but, you know, we'll enjoy it. Let's enjoy it.
Hey, look, one of ours punched the bully in the nose. Watch the bullies run. Look, everybody, it's a teachable moment.
And last night, I got to where I watch Rachel as much as I can, Rachel Maddow. And people, they were saying today that she really got on to Grayson. No, what she did, she compared what he said. She said, now, if what he's saying is not, if he's apologizing, she started playing what all these Republicans said about the death, you know, the death squad and all that kind of stuff. They had the woman, we got a woman down here from Florida. She's got two names, two last names. And
Ileana Ross Leighton.
Who?
Ileana Ross Leighton. Or are you talking about Debbie Wasserman Schultz?
No, Wasserman Schultz is a Democrat. Right.
That's what I'm saying. So I was thinking you were referring to Ileana Ross Leighton.
She's not the cute one from Cuba. The is one from here in Central Florida. She's an older lady.
Yeah, that's
is
that's
that the one.
Yeah, that's Ileana Ross Leighton. That's the
you
that's.
No, she's the one that when we, you know, France wouldn't go to war for us, she wanted to have all of our servicemen dug up, you know, from those graves. And
yeah, well, isn't home. Yeah, and she's the same one that when she got a phone call from Barack Obama, she got on the phone and said, "Yeah, okay, funny. Who is it really?"
I didn't hear about that one.
Yeah, I think we're talking about the same critter here.
Could be, and she had one of from her, and of course, you know, the lovely Mrs. Fox from.
Oh, Virginia Fox.
You know, they had different ones what they had said, and she said, "Well." I say God bless Nancy Pelosi for saying what she said. Yeah, but I just love him. He said, "Yeah, I want to apologize to all the dead people, all the people who will die," and it's so true. It's really true.
Well, it is, and I mean, there's so many ways to look at something like that, Juanita, because you know, you think we were talking about JFK a moment ago. If you can imagine. November 22nd, 1963, imagine some poor working farmer in a rice paddy in Vietnam and had no idea on however that date is calendrically noted there,
mm-hmm.
had no idea that single act would lead to the wholesale massacre of over a million of his fellow countrymen.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. Oh, there's so many things. And see, that's exactly like now. They want to take over the government now. And my God, you know, if they do that now, if they did get do it, and they will try. God knows they will try. where are we going to be? We're really going to be up the creek without a paddle.
In a barbed wire canoe.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I was talking to my son some today about different things, about how we, in this country, we're so narrow-minded, you know, and we don't, well, I was talking about the, I almost said stovetop dressing, but I mean the mountaintop removal. And I said, you know, they don't realize there's only so many mountains, you know, those people that work there. There's only so many mountains in your state.
There's only so many mountains on the planet. You could argue that more are being made, but it's a painfully slow process that even Don Blankenship can't expect to be around for.
You know, people don't think. They don't realize they're working against their own self. Things will just skip around, you know, and he said something about when he was in school, there was a guy came up to him and said, "How come you don't talk like us?" Am I saying that good? A real good redneck?
Yeah, very, very nicely done, Juanita. Yeah.
And I said, "Are you kidding?" I said, "When did that happen in high school?" He said, "No, in grammar school. How come you talk funny? You don't talk like us."
Oh, mercy.
My son doesn't have his biggest southern accent as I do. In fact, you really can't hear it until he's over the phone or something. But anyway, I mean, he's got a nice voice, and I'm like, wow, you know, people are so weird. And then,
you know what, Juanita, it's so funny you would mention that because, you know, I've told the story before how my parents moved. They married and moved down to Alabama from West Virginia about 1960. And they lived there for the rest of their lives. 37 years for my mother and 47 for my father.
Yeah.
And from the day they got there till the day they died, everybody would say, "Where are you from? You talk funny."
I know where I got the, I know why we were talking about the accent. I had C-SPAN on, and there were a bunch of Republicans on in the Congress, and the doctor, you know, that doctor from Georgia?
Yeah.
That's on constantly. Well, he was on, and my son said, "Well, how long are they going to stay on?" I said, "Just to get through, I guess." But he was stating what he was wanting to do for the health care, you know. And I said, "You know that accent?" I said, "I know I'm Southern, but I don't, there's a certain Southern accent just sounds so phony, baloney." Now, his is not as bad as some of the others, but there's a bunch of them in Congress now. Jeff Sessions, for one.
Oh, the only thing is, I think that's sadly real. Just that mush-mouthed, deep South cracker accent. I think he does play it for more than it is.
Why?
Well, because he wants everybody to understand that, you know, there ain't no doubt about where he's from. You know, and if you sound like Foghorn Leghorn, I guess that's political capital in some corners of this country.
As funny as that,
you know, you get a six pack of Pabst Blue Ribbon in me, and I'm straight up redneck, long gone.
Well, you know, I'm considered, you know, people hear me talk, and a lot of them say, "Oh, yeah, redneck." But.
No, you have a lovely Southern accent. It's almost like I can place it. Because there are certain pronunciations that don't go with some Southern accents that do go with others, and you've talked about how your folks came out of Georgia and everything, and you can hear that in your voice. Because it's a different accent.
Yeah, and I've been in Florida a long, long time, you know, but it's there.
Oh, I know. I know.
But anyway, there was something else I wanted to say, and I guess I don't remember now, but that's how we got to talking about the accents. And he said he really got a lot of flack because he didn't talk like they did. My son.
Yeah.
Right. And, well, see, there's a line in a song that I just love to pieces. The name of the song is Good Old Boys Like Me.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm going to have to look and find and see, because you can't just mention a song without mentioning who did it. But there's a line in it where he says, but I could choose. See, when I grew up, I ran with a kid down the street, watched him burn himself up on bourbon and speed, but I was smarter than most, and I could choose, learn to talk like the man on the 6 o'clock news.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of what happened with me, because I got exposed to speech and theater and drama.
Uh-huh.
And then radio as a teenager, and you had to learn to speak a certain way. I have cast a lot of that aside over the years, especially since we started doing the show 4 years ago out of this studio, because there's no need for that pretense. There's no need to pretend that one is something one is not. I mean, if you listen to Bill Moyers, you know, Bill Moyers has a beautiful Southern quality to his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a joy to listen to, whether he's saying good morning or, you know, go to blazes.
Yeah. Well, you know, you talk about good old boys. There's nothing like a really good old boy.
No. No.
They're wonderful. But.
And see, you're touching something there, Juanita, that I know that David in Tennessee and I have discussed from time to time, and that is. It's impossible for a Southern liberal to give up on his or her fellow Southerners, because we, by virtue of who we are as Southerners, we are so deeply rooted in where we come from that the hatefulness and the meanness and the bigotry and the ignorance is about 10 times as painful to a Southern liberal as it is to a liberal from somewhere else, I would submit, because there is so very much to love about the South.
Uh-huh.
And there's so very much that could be so wonderful.
Right.
If only some vile old political habits could finally be broken.
Right.
And every now and then you see the cracks beginning to appear in the veneer of that hateful old politics, and a Southern liberal looks and says, see, it's going to be when it gets right, it's going to be so right.
Yeah. We can only dream. Like what Robert Kennedy said, others say why or something, and he says why not.
Yeah, some people see things as they are and ask why. I see things as they should be and ask why not. Isn't that what it is? I've probably butchered that too. I've been on a bit of a tear lately.
I think that's the gist of it at least. And another thing, I guess I got off the subject about what we can do in this country. You know, if we don't go to alternative energy, my son was talking about that. We have a law down here. They've added, the stuff that they add to gasoline made out of corn.
Oh, ethanol?
Yeah. It's been added. We have a law down here where everything, you know, and he's having trouble with his vehicle, and he thinks it's because of that. You know, when you had a carburetor, but he's got the fuel injector, and it seemed to be giving a lot of trouble. It's not anything new.
Well, now, the fact of the matter is, I was told by somebody who knows his way around the mechanics of an automobile, Juanita, you'll see, for instance, the check engine light come on, you know, the light that you have to pay $100 to get it turned off.
Yeah.
And they'll put it on the little diagnostic computer, and they'll say, because this was said to me, it says your oxygen sensors needing replaced. I said, well, that's going to be pricey. He said, yeah, but I wouldn't. I said, why not? It's the oxygen sensor. He said, because with the addition of all the ethanol to the gasoline, that's what's causing the sensor to respond the way that it's responding.
Oh.
So I think that there may very well be some truth in what you're talking about.
Yeah, because I know years ago we had a local people, they sold ethanol. They had a gas station, and I had this real old vehicle, and I used it in it, you know. and used it till it died on me. And anyway, that had a carburetor, but this truck, I think it's an 81, and it doesn't have, it has the fuel injectors. I think it has two. But the problem, too, with getting older vehicles is people have done so much teeter-tottering to them, you know, putting other, you know, it's a different motor than it is that
sure.
you make. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And it just really messes you up. And, but anyhow, he found out, you know, he was saying, well, where can I buy some gas that doesn't have ethanol in it? And they said, you can in Florida because it's the law. We have to have a certain amount of ethanol. And they were attributed to Charlie Crist, I don't, you know. But anyhow, all that kind of good stuff going on. But if our country, well, I'm getting back. He was talking about to make ethanol, how much water, you know, you had to ruin. And I said, well, that's the same thing with coal. And it's the same thing with nuclear. And I'm sure that maybe you could use corn water again. I don't know. But you sure can't use nuclear or coal water again because that's it.
No, it's all water intensive, and the water's ruined by the time you're done. That's like the liquid coal boondoggle that keeps getting hustled around here that's going to, you know, we're going to run the Air Force on liquid coal. They'd have to suck the Ohio River dry.
Yeah, it was sad. And see, our country will not stay.
And there are some folks who live downstream from that, Juanita, who are not going to take kindly to it.
Well, you know, and like they said that after, you know, Carter and got out and Reagan took off the
solar panels.
You know, before that, people were getting rebates from the government for having a solar water water heaters.
Right.
A lot of people got them, and they liked them. But then we were, you know, like you know, you've got those people that are manufacturing the windmills, and we were starting to have people over here doing solar, but there wasn't anybody from the government backing them up. They're backing up coal. They're backing up nuclear. Or they're backing up oil. And then, you know, then you got, it goes overseas. And we're left without it. And the people.
Well, right. And the same thing with coal in its own right, Juanita. You know, so much of what gets blown up here, it gets put on a slow boat to China. And if it's such, you know, because every time I say, you know.
It doesn't make sense.
Well, look at the press release from Senator Rockefeller. He's got this statement in there about how America cannot survive without coal. Well, then why in the sweet name of God are we shipping the coal to China?
I'm just
a simple babbling hillbilly radio talk guy. But that just, you know, I do my ciphering and it don't add up.
I heard two Republicans on in the Congress today and the Senate. I switched them back and forth, and they were talking about there's coal. We got, you know, it's this and that and the other, you know.
I saw the darndest sticker today while Agnes and I were out. I about had a hissy, Juanita. See, there's one of them fun Southern words, a hissy.
Yeah.
I about had kittens with crocheted tails. I saw a sticker on a minivan in a parking lot over by to the Kroger's that said "Wives of Coal."
Woo.
You know, I mean, Friends of Coal was weird enough.
Yeah.
Wives of Coal. I mean, because that conjured up some sort of demonic night. Because, like, if you become a nun, you're a bride of Christ, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you wear the little lady penguin dress and everything.
And the wedding ring.
Right. And I guess if you're a wife of coal,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to know what the ceremony's like, and I certainly don't want to know a darn thing about the honeymoon.
Yeah. You know, I'm just looking on the Internet here, and I've got a little saying about Thomas Edison. Of all things, coal is dirty. We are like tenant farmers chopping down the fence around our house for fuel when we should be using nature's inexhaustible sources of energy, sun, wind, and tide. I'd put my money on the sun and solar energy. What a source of power. I hope we don't have to wait until oil and coal run out before we tackle that. Thomas Edison, 1931.
You're kidding me. Will you put that in an email, please?
Sure.
I'm because I'll print that up and sort of hang. And you know what? I'll send that around to the my friends on our little email list, and I think it'll wind up on a bunch of walls.
Okay. Isn't that funny? We're talking, and I look, and here that is right in front of me.
Amazing how that happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful evening. This has been a lovely conversation.
And you feeling better tonight?
Yes.
You sound better.
I don't hear. I got up this morning and I did not feel better, but I think my sinuses are beginning to clear a little bit, and I don't feel like I'm echoing around inside my own brain. By the way, just for sharing purposes, before you go, our buddy David in Tennessee has written in with a correction.
Okay.
And Bill Moyers is not Southern. Bill Moyers is Texan.
Oh, well.
We are so closely related that should the outside world intrude as to be indistinguishable, but when the Texan meets the Tennessean sitting across the table, the differences to us are vast.
Okay.
He says, you, Bob, know the history of gone to Texas. He said, I can give you vocal representation of a Texas accent versus any of the three basic Tennessee accents. Trust me, Hoss, we can hear each other's separateness. And okay, I stand corrected. Shame on me for the sweeping generalization.
Yeah, but those generalizations, I get in trouble all the time.
And now this will be followed by a note from horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner giving an amen to Brother David in Tennessee, and you know both of them coming at me. I just stay in trouble here, Juanita. I just stay in trouble. What's a poor hillbilly to do?
Did y'all get good results this morning?
Yes, we did. Thank you for asking. Yes, we did. The little weirdos from the coal company and the DEP. You know, there's a certain lovely symmetry to seeing a lawyer for the Department of Environmental Protection sitting down next to the lawyer for the vile polluting coal company, because you know there it is. You know, it's kind of like seeing the hooker and the John together. But they stood up there and they argued that we did not have standing. And standing's one of those fancy legal words. We did not have standing to bring this appeal. That we didn't have any business dirtying up that courtroom with our nasty little peasant selves.
Oh.
And the circuit judge apparently, I mean, he was very genial and very, very scholarly, but apparently he didn't take it too kindly like.
All right.
Because he at the end of a bunch of ballyhoo that probably wound up being $6,000 worth of highfalutin silk stocking law firm legal argumentating, he said, "Well, boys, you lose. This appeal is going forward."
All right.
Because he said I can't imagine under the Constitution of this state and this nation. He said I can't imagine a situation where you can have. Where you can just shut the doors and the courtroom and tell people to go away and lump it.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful little thing. So the appeal will go forward, and our lawyer, a young man, a young Oregonian named Derek Teeny, did his usual masterful job, and I give him high praise at this point.
Well, our Oregonians are wonderful people. Aren't they the ones?
They are that, and we've got folks here on the horn to prove it. We got News Ninja Gene, News Ninja Susan, and we got a good handful of other Oregonians. That's why I keep saying I got to get out there one of these days.
Susan hit me with my printer, and I've never thanked her, and I'm thanking her now.
Well, and you know what? She's real good to do that kind of thing. But that's the beauty of this little horn family, isn't it, Juanita?
Yes, it is. I think you got some great people. I tell you. And I wish I had the sense that when I was about half the sense that, what's the girl that calls herself Freckles?
Cassie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The 15, or she's...
No, she's 18.
You'll think of her as 15.
Yeah, she's a young woman now.
Yeah.
Kind of hard.
You know,
kind of hard to get your head around, but yeah.
What I'm telling you, I would have. I wish I'd have, maybe even now have the common sense that she has. She's amazing and brilliant. She's got beautiful brilliance. She's not just got brilliance. She's got a. It's a beautiful, you know, a charismatic.
I think if things continue on their current track, the world is going to roll at her feet.
Yeah.
And I can't wait until that day comes.
Yeah. So we got some wonderful, wonderful folks.
We do indeed. Well, Juanita, have yourself a wonderful evening.
You too.
All right. Take care. We'll talk soon. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I just looked at the clock. Where did 2 hours go? Holy cow! That's almost halfway a Harry Carey impression, isn't it? So let's take a break. Coming up, our good friend Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen with the Green News Report. And your phone calls, if you are so inclined. 877-443-2366 is the toll-free number. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your own nickel. If you're if that's okay by you, 304-658-3333. Email, of course, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. This is, of course, America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
When I think back on all the crap I wonder I can think at all, and my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Hold a throne, the Gilliston's nice bright colors, Gilliston's greens and summers makes you think all.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's the first day of October, 2009.
Landmark climate legislation finally drops in the Senate. EPA plows forward, plus mutiny at the Chamber of Commerce.
All of that and more straight ahead. Prepare for 6 minutes of green news and snarky commentary.
Environmentalists, I swear, if you take away my flush toilet paper, I'm just going to use the next softest thing, spotted owls.
You tell them, Stephen. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report.
The latest economic study this week predicts up to 1.9 million new jobs in America if we pass our bill.
The long-awaited climate and clean energy legislation has landed in the Senate.
We know that energy, clean energy, is the ticket to strong, stable economic growth. It's right here in front of our eyes, in the ingenuity of our workers, in the vision of our entrepreneurs.
That was Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer of California, who, along with John Kerry of Massachusetts, introduced the Senate version of landmark clean energy and climate legislation yesterday. The Clean Energy Jobs and American Power Act, or Boxer-Kerry for short, it closely tracks the Waxman-Markey bill passed by the House this summer, but with a few key differences, calls for higher emissions cuts, 20% by 2020. It also removes a provision in the House version that would have restricted the EPA's authority to regulate emissions. One thing the bill doesn't contain, the word climate. The Senate bill now moves to committee for what promises to be contentious negotiations.
What does that mean that it doesn't contain the word prime?
They wanted to focus on the clean energy economy and transitioning to a clean energy economy rather than focusing on climate change, which is an international issue, not necessarily a national one.
I will reserve snarky comment on that. In that case, I am glad to see, however, that the Senate bill seems to be better, at least, than the House bill, which became so watered down. That said, the Senate bill still has quite a ways to go and quite a bit of watering down ahead, I suspect.
Yes, it has to go to several committees, including the Finance Committee chaired by Max Baucus, who is doing such a great job with health care, and the Agricultural Committee, which is chaired by Blue Dog Democrat Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, who has already said she plans on doing quite a bit to it in her committee.
Oh, brother, we got to count on Max Baucus and Blanche Lincoln.
Regardless, even if no legislation passes at all, the EPA announced that it will regulate the largest emitters with new regulations yet to be determined, and that means new standards for big emitters like coal-fired power plants. Predictably, powerful corporate interests like, say, the fossil fuel industry are already intensely lobbying against it, and Republicans are against it as well, calling it an energy tax that will kill jobs and destroy the economy. You can check out the bill and all the analysis online. We have it all at our website, greennews.bradblog.com.
So what's the upshot here? Does this stand a chance of making it through the Senate here before Obama goes to Copenhagen?
It is unlikely that there will be an actual bill in place for Obama to sign prior to Copenhagen, but the Senators Boxer and Kerry do hope to have some kind of legislation at least completed prior to Copenhagen, even if it doesn't make it to markup and reconciliation with the House before the December.
What could possibly go wrong?
Meanwhile, climate scientists say that a sea level rise of 6 feet may be, quote, unstoppable at this point. At an international climate change conference held at Oxford University this week, climate scientists scientists say that even if the world did somehow manage to go to zero emissions, the rise is essentially inevitable by the end of the century. This is in addition to the latest study we reported on earlier this week that says even with emissions reductions, 6 degrees of warming may be inevitable as well. 1 billion people are estimated to live in vulnerable low-lying areas along the sea, along with most of the world's major cities, and we've already seen examples of how low-lying areas are vulnerable with the tropical storm that hit the Philippines this week, killing hundreds of people. The tsunami that hit in Indonesia shows how vulnerable low-lying areas are to sea level rise.
And by way of a quick update here at this hour, more than 500 people were killed by the earthquake this week in Indonesia, and at least 150 so far from the tsunami that followed it in Samoa and American Samoa. The death toll from both related events is likely to rise.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the nation's largest business lobbying group, has something of a mutiny on its hands.
Good.
Over its opposition to climate change legislation. The exodus began after the chamber proposed putting climate science and the EPA on trial, literally, like a scoped monkey trial over evolution. On Monday, the nation's largest electric utility announced it was dropping its membership. In a speech at, of all things, a clean energy conference, Exelon's CEO said, quote, inaction on climate change is not an option. Exelon follows Pacific Gas and Electric and New Mexico's PNM, two electric utilities who broke up with the chamber last week, over what PG&E called, quote, disingenuous attempts to diminish or distort the reality of climate change.
Good. And just last night, I understand Nike also dropped out from the board of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I don't know if people understand, but the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is not a federal organization. I always thought it was. In fact, it's a lobbying group. It's the largest lobbying group in the country. They lean hard to the right, and they are known for spending more money than any other lobbying organization per year. They have an extraordinary amount of power, and it's great to see some of these businesses kicking back and saying, no, no, we're not going to play along with your corporatist agenda here at the expense of this planet.
Now, in response, the chamber insists that it is not denying the existence or the reality of climate change, just any legislation that might come out from Democrats to deal with it.
The U.S. Chamber can say anything they want. I think their actions speak for themselves. Read about that and much more at our blog, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
13 past the hour on this Thursday night edition of The Horn. And I think it would be appropriate. I hope he's still here, or she, or whomever. But let's go to the phones because someone has been patiently waiting. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going?
Yeah, and trust me, you're always worth waiting for, man.
Well, bless your heart.
Yeah, thank you. You know what's so sad about the whole coal and oil thing? That it causes so much death and destruction. And the reality is it doesn't have to be. You know, we have the technology. I kind of say if we absolutely didn't have the technology to switch.
Yeah, if we were having to do an Apollo moon rocket program to figure out how to capture the energy of the sun or make a windmill go. But, you know, lucky for us, 4,000 years ago, the Persians figured out that whole windmill thing.
And that's the thing, you know, it's like, and I've come to the conclusion that it's just really about keeping NASA's amount of power in as few hands as possible. And if you look at anything, anything in life, whether it be, you know, the banking elite, the military cartels, it's all, well, the conservative mindset is keeping power in as few hands as possible.
Oh, always. Always, yes.
And they'll do it by any means necessary.
And it's scary when it's used in a context like that, by any means necessary, is rather disturbing.
It is. You know, you have this idiot who's probably literally the dumbest person in Congress, Michelle Bachmann, and school clinics will have abortions and all, you know?
Well, I caught a little bit of the markup hearing. I guess it was yesterday, Kevin, or maybe it was this morning. It all runs together for me. But it was a colloquy between Orrin Hatch and John Cornyn of Texas, going back and forth about how they were worried that federal funds could be used for abortion. Well, I mean, I don't. After Representative Grayson blistered him yesterday by saying, you know, I think we should be concerned about people after they're born too. You know, what a delicious just.
I love that.
A rapier right between the ribs of the right wing. Ooh, they got us again.
I love that, man. It's like.
Yeah, where did he come from?
There is hope for Florida yet.
but anyway. To then turn around and see these two pontificating white uterus-free dudes sweating bullets over whether some woman who got raped by Uncle Daddy might be able to get an abortion in a healthcare system. You know, I've lost the ability, Kevin, to responsibly respond to something like that, because I heard, and it happened. I mean, Agnes walked in. What's the matter, dear? Because I was sitting there just power swearing at the television again. You no good, Nitz Blagenstack, fart nothing's.
You know what it is? It all comes down to the whole abortion issue. Is, you know, I don't want to say the P word on the radio, but P control, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, right. We've heard our fair share of Prince.
Okay, you know, and that's what it's all about. Because the fact of the matter is, like Chris Rock said, no 20-something-year-old young woman wants to bang any of these old men. So you know.
Well, it's that, and it's almost. It's hard to enunciate, Kevin, but it has everything to do in the world with these tired, old, worn out, the flabby white guys who, even when they were young men, were unable to come to terms with the fact that a female of the species is every bit as good and every bit as human as they are. You know, I can't even imagine what it must be like to be the wife of a right winger, because I dig smart women. You know, I'm not threatened by them.
Yeah, most right wingers do not have the most intelligent women around. Look at a prime example. Even most right wing women are really not the brightest bulbs on the tree.
Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah, Sarah Palin.
And who's the freak in Tennessee? Marsha Blackburn?
Oh, yeah. You know, prime example. To me, there comes two kinds of right-wing females. The ones who are basically control freaks who are intelligent, like, and then the ones who are not that intelligent who will just do whatever they say kind of people. Because to me, Condoleezza Rice, it's just an extreme control freak.
Yeah, yeah. A guy in stiletto heels? Wow, that's probably sexist of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would even say Condoleezza Rice was all that intelligent. It was just that, because if she was, you know, I just think she had an extreme crush on George W.
Well, you know, there is that clip out there where she refers to him as my husband, or the president.
Yeah.
That needs to just be, I don't know, that should be heard every other day for just sheer creepiness. But you know, you talk about the right-wing female. Sandra Day O'Connor visited West Virginia recently to deliver some lecture somewhere. And this woman who should have put on her tombstone, she gave us 8 years of torture, misery, and hell on earth. She gave us George W. Bush, despite being the first woman on the court. She came to West Virginia to tell us that we need to appoint our judges and not elect them. All, you know, because you know, Don Blankenship turned Brent Benjamin into the poster child for politically corrupt elections. And but once again, you know, that's the way it is with the right wing. They go for the incredibly complex answer instead of going for the incredibly simple one. Because the answer to corrupt elections of judges is not to stop to take away the right of the people to vote for judges, Kevin. The answer to that is to take the daggum money out of the elections and let the people's voices be heard.
Exactly.
But a right winger can't see that, because what they see in the Blankenship case coming down from the Supreme Court is an opportunity to take away votes. And you've heard it a million times here, other places. Republicans always benefit any time they can keep people away from a ballot box.
Exactly.
Whether they do it by the literacy tests or poll taxes or dummied up, faked up, frauded up, ginned up, rubed up the touchscreen voting machines, or in this case, by simply trying to take away the right of the people to be heard.
Exactly.
I mean, can you imagine what the bench would look like in this state if somebody like our governor, the Joe Manchin, who never met a mountaintop removal job he didn't love, had the power to make sure that some partisan hack, not from a political party, but from the coal industry, was ensconced on every bench in every county in this state? But that's a big thing with the right wing, not just in West Virginia, but in anywhere that the people's voice is heard in a judicial election. The right wing is there to say, well, you know, you need to stop letting them vote for the judges. You need to let a responsible man like a governor do the appointing. That's the way to do that. And any time, Kevin, that I hear somebody tell me that I don't have any business voting for somebody, I get my back up a little bit.
Oh, of course, because you're an intelligent person, and that's the thing. Whenever, you know, I cannot overemphasize enough, whenever a Republican keeps on saying we need to cut the size of government down, they're saying we need to cut down the power of the people.
We need to cut down the ability of government to respond to the desires, wishes, and needs of the people.
Exactly.
Which, again, goes back to Grover Norquist and drown it in a bathtub.
Exactly. And that's what's happening, whether, you know, and I can't get, for the life of me, and this is why I say, like, I had this in another conversation where, you know, and I think it was with you, it might have been with Guy also, because, you know, both of you are brilliant, so at times I get you confused.
Laying it on thick tonight, aren't you, Kevin?
Okay, I try.
Okay, you can stop now.
Okay, it's that I prefer, okay, to me, any racism is bad, but if I have to live in a racist world, which is what I have to live in, give me the European style any day.
I'm not sure I know. What is that?
Well, like I said, in England or any one of these, okay, they may hate you because you have a certain color or linguistic affiliation or whatever, but they don't hate you that much where it's going to stop their means from getting health care and all that.
Okay, yeah, I see. I thought you were going to say you prefer the open kind as opposed to the pernicious whispered variety.
Well, to me, both of them are just bad, you know.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I prefer the whispered variety to a certain degree than the open kind, being a lifelong New Yorker. Because to a certain degree, I'd rather be blissfully ignorant on certain things.
Understandable.
Okay. You know, because like I said, some of the ugliness that I've experienced when I left New York City, I'm like, I think I prefer the other kind. You know, and that's the thing that European, like English society, England has some very brutal racism, but they're not cutting out their social welfare programs.
Right. Because that's also because while England is very much a class-based society, it doesn't have the same sort of classism that evolved over here across the pond, where the nation got, you know, where the colonization of this continent began with, for instance, up in Massachusetts, religious fanatics. Or in Virginia with corporatists hell-bent on trying to, dredge wealth out of the country by sending people who had no idea how to farm into an area where they would have to. You know, I mean, the people, do you realize who was sent to the Jamestown colony? Inner-city London folks.
Exactly.
Nobody with any idea, and you know, gentlemen adventurers. Nobody who had any idea how to stick, you know, how to grow anything.
Well, the thing is, with both situations, it all comes back to these were extreme religious Calvinists. Okay, and to me, Calvinism it gives God's blessing to sociopathic behavior.
Ooh, wow, that's nice. That's beautiful. Write that down.
Thank you. Now you're making my ego swell.
Yeah, Calvinism gives God's blessing to sociopathic behavior. That's one for the ages, Kevin.
It does. You know, it's like one of the things that they used to tell, and I've heard a lot of, you know, African-American born-again Christians, say this, well, you know, if it wasn't for slavery, we would not learn the lessons of Christ. And I'm like, Coptic Church, Egypt, you know.
Yeah.
Does that ring a bell somewhere? You know, it's been around since the Catholic Church because all three churches go back to the Nicene Conference. And they just divided the basic, you know, rituals along with, because if you ever notice, the Catholic Church, the Coptic Church, and the Eastern Orthodox Church are basically the same thing. You know, it's just
not entirely, but certainly as compared to, say, you know, your fundamental apostolic holiness or your Pentecostal Bible believing, sure.
Yeah, but you know, I've been to all three, and it's, you know, other than a few adjustments here and there, they're basically the same, you know, and their calendars are different. You know, the Orthodox calendar is usually a month later.
Yeah, like when Easter comes and that kind of thing?
Yeah, and the Coptic Church, it's the same thing. I think it's roughly, you know, a couple of weeks or whatever. But in essence, in ritual and how they perform the services, it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of a football geek, and for some reason or other, I was reading the other day, and it surprised me to find out that that absolute beast in the, and he's injured right now, but that absolute beast in the defensive backfield of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Troy Polamalu,
yeah,
devout Greek Orthodox,
yeah,
And I got to tell you, I was a little bit pleased when I read it. I went, oh, wow, cool. He's not a Mormon. But no, you're right. I mean, those similarities are there. Of course, the Coptic Church is one of the oldest denominations on the planet, and it is said that a lot of the so-called Gnostic gospels came out of the Coptic tradition. I don't know if you've ever read any of those, but you know, just absolutely fascinating. If you've ever read the Gospel of St. Thomas. It's like reading a text of a conversation by with a Zen master.
Oh yes. Well, like I said before, you know, and this is how a lot of black conservatives and go back to the original conversation, justify slavery and Jim Crow laws and all that.
Black conservatives?
Yeah.
You mean like Michael Steele?
Yeah. Even though he's Catholic, but I said that Calvinism is so entrenched into this country's psyche, even non-Calvinistic following people.
Well, yeah, and what it is, the Calvinism, you know, I mean, England had the Church of England and the Puritans. And for instance, when the Puritans, whatever they called themselves, true believers or whatever, when they came to Massachusetts, they came because the Church of England was too heathen for them.
Exactly.
It wasn't that the Church of England wouldn't get along with them; they refused to get along with the state religion in the United Kingdom. If I have my teaching from Eugene Finnerman correct. But where the Calvinism rears its ugly head is out of Scotland, and it's the Scots-Irish incursion into the colonies that brings that Calvinist born on third thinking you hit a triple because God loves you sort of mentality to the whole affair, and it's Calvinists and not necessarily Anglicans who become the most pernicious practitioners of slavery in the Old South.
Exactly.
As well as some Methodists.
Exactly. Well, the Puritans or the ones who moved up to Massachusetts. But if you ever notice, they're more Lutheran based, where they just want it with little fine streaks of Calvinism in there. Because it's strange. I'll never forget one time on a trip to Maine. I went to a Baptist church up there, and I'm like, wow, this is almost. I feel almost comfortable here, in opposed to going to a Baptist church in the South.
Well, one of the things that Ken Burns' documentary on the national parks pointed out, Kevin, was that part of the motivation for David Rockefeller, who was John D. Rockefeller Jr., to step away from the business end of being a Rockefeller, had to do with his strict, here it is, Baptist upbringing. And that he was that he was called upon by his faith to try to do good works.
Yeah.
And you know, please remember that it was a Massachusetts Baptist minister in 1890 something who wrote the original Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. He was also a socialist Baptist minister, I might add.
The church I got married in New York, Riverside Church, Baptist.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't have any problem sitting through a service at Riverside.
Oh, yeah. Very progressive. And I'm like, okay, this is a place that I can, you know, and I'm a staunch Anglican. You know, this was a place that
I was trying to cut you some sort of dogmatic space there by mentioning the Scots-Irish as opposed to the Anglicans.
Well, the thing is...
We try to help here.
Well, I have Scots-Irish blood, as you know, by way of Jamaica, but they've been pretty much indoctrinated into the Anglican part. Part of the reason why so many white labor were sent to the Caribbean and the South was because, don't forget, you know, you've heard the term arrested by being black in modern times.
DWB.
Yeah. Well, pretty much the same went for most Celts in the British Isles, you know. walking through the past while practicing the wrong faith.
Yeah.
You know, you happen to be at the wrong place, wrong time, and happen to have the wrong faith.
Right. Well, that's like, you know, the Puritans or whatever they were, they thought that the Book of Common Prayer was an exercise in heathenistic excess.
Exactly. And hence, you know, when the Cromwell family and the Boylan family started sending all these people to the Caribbean and the American South.
Right.
This is why I think, you know, the fundamentalism took such a hold, particularly in the South, is because that was a way of moving up. A lot of them were, when they were in England, were Catholics, but when they came here, you know, if you want to get out of the situation you're in, you need to convert.
Yeah, unless you were going to Lord Baltimore's Maryland.
Exactly. You know. And that was how they got out of it. Because don't forget, the Carolinas were penal colonies.
As was Georgia.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the Carolinas.
But that's how it started. Georgia, and it wasn't in conditions. If you wanted to get out of your indentured servitude, you converted. So, hence, you know, in the shores of the British Isles, you were Catholic. But if you wanted to get off the plantations, you converted to the quote-unquote right church.
Oh, God. Will we ever get a break from it, Kevin?
I don't know. You know, if I put it this way, a lot of Christians are saying that, and I challenge Christians on these, because I'm close to one. My closest friend is a born-again Christian. And I challenge them on this. You know what? You're probably right, because if you don't get your way, you're going to make it happen.
Yeah, there's no such thing. In other words, there's no such thing as not getting your way, where they're concerned.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Well, that's like, I mean, consider this little dichotomy here. Today's news off of Wall Street. Dow plunges 200 points. Wall Street stages a sharp retreat after labor market and manufacturing reports raise worries about the strength of the recovery. Bank stocks plunge. Okay, so it's a labor market, which means that the tight-fisted people are afraid that working people might be making too much money, or that there's not enough working people who are actually working for too little money to support their anarcho-Randian habit. You got that story, right?
Yeah.
Never mind the details. Well, then I go over here to a story that was sent along to me by our buddy Victor. Headline: U.S. Census Bureau report, 40 million living in poverty. The overall poverty rate in the U.S. rose to 13.2% in 2008 as workers across all sectors of the economy became jobless and increasing numbers of families were forced into destitution. According to a new government report, real median household income also declined by 3.6%. Getting kind of tired of these kind of statistics, aren't you? But my point is, you never see a headline on any of these business networks or the stock ticker wires or whatever that says Dow plunges on reports of poverty. Because the market, based as it is on the most amoral of principles, not immoral, but amoral. It's not immoral. It just ain't got any amoral principles. The market doesn't care if people starve as long as the people controlling the bucks don't.
Yeah.
You know, the market will fall on oil futures if the President Ahmadinejad says death to the great Satan. And then if you remember a few years back, George Bush had come out and say, well, I think we need regime change in Iran. And the next thing you know, oil futures would go up.
Exactly. So this is why I say, you know, Calvinism is...
because that meant that the money was going to be protected.
Yeah. It is basically God's blessing onto sociopathic behavior.
It's a beautiful thing.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. But it's a beautiful distillation of an ugly concept.
Yeah, you know, and frankly, I'm tired of it. I really am. It's just, you know.
Well, so the question is, how do you fix it?
Well, I think it's on the process to be fixed. Unfortunately, you know, it's been causing a lot of bloodshed. Like, you know, the right wingers like to say how George Bush protected us after 9/11.
He kept us safe.
He kept us safe after 9/11?
Yeah, just not before.
And you know what? He didn't keep us safe. Put it this way. The terrorists have been been holding a lot of restraint.
Right, because they don't necessarily have a percentage in doing something right now. Or yeah. During the rest of the Bush presidency. They accomplished their goal on September 11th because we threw our Constitution out the window. We pissed ourselves and cowered in fear in the corner.
Yeah.
We started a war with the Muslim world.
Yeah.
And, you know, why do you need to do it again? You got everything. You got everything on the first swing.
On what? Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and by the way, an email rolling in from Gail down in Australia. She says, interestingly, the United Kingdom also has the highest rate of interracial marriage of anywhere in Europe. She says, I've been wondering why this is, and I think this is somehow ironically because of the class system in some way. Class trumps race. She says, just a theory, though, but that makes perfectly good sense.
Well, the thing is, I've always said, and this is one thing that people, you know, Africans also participated in the slave trade a great deal.
You mean clan to clan, capturing folks and selling them off to the Arab traders who then sold them off to the Portuguese and Dutch?
That, and even on this side of the Atlantic where a lot of slave catchers were African or had African ancestry, a lot of overseers. You ever heard the term, head, you know what, in charge?
Sadly, yes.
That's where it comes from.
My father came home from work one day on the furnace floor, Kevin. And he said, I heard the damnedest thing I've ever heard in my life today. And it was said in jest, if you can, but one of the fellows that he worked with, a black fellow, was poking fun at my dad, and he said, you know, because my dad was a foreman, and he said, you know, go set up to tap the furnace or go get go and do that. And he said, no. My dad said, what? He said, no, he's going to do it. He said, well, why is he going to do it instead you're going to do it? And he looked at my dad and said, because I'm the HNIC. My dad said, you know, totally innocent. What's that?
Yeah.
At which point he gets it explained to him, and my dad just calls a break and goes in his office and shuts the door for a couple of minutes. It was one of those where he came home and said, Margaret, you're not going to believe what I heard today.
Yeah.
But that's okay because, they had lots of fun nicknames for him too. Doughbelly.
So, you know, that's something that people that's hardly mentioned in history.
Right, along with the one drop rule.
That
one so-called one drop of black blood. Yeah, oddly enough, all the blood I've ever seen was red. But one drop of black blood would qualify you as of color.
Exactly.
No matter how white you appeared to be.
Yeah. And you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, Calvinism is so ingrained into our culture. It's a means of upward mobility.
I think it's probably manifested in the way that some people pray to win the lottery. Or maybe it's manifested in the way that some people catch the ball in the end zone and point at the sky. You know, God, I wouldn't have caught this touchdown if you didn't like me a lot.
Exactly.
I mean, isn't that Calvinist in its own nature?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and the gospel of God loves me more than he loves you is beyond me.
And is it, well, it, and again, isn't the modern current manifestation of that, Kevin, isn't that the prosperity gospel of people like the Joyce Meyer and Joel Osteen and that creepy guy out in the Crystal Cathedral and the Creflo Dollar and the whole bunch?
And
Kenneth Copeland?
Last name, Dollar. I am not going into okay?
Yeah. And that's the thing. I can, surely to God that's not his real name.
Any minister's name is Dollar, but you see, that's practiced in our neighborhoods too, you know. Creflo Dollar, you know, has kind of went big time with it, but, you know, you ever heard of Reverend Ike?
Oh, gosh, yes, and his prayer cloths and...
Yeah. One line he was famous for was, you know, people go around saying they've been seeing me in a Cadillac. He said, you know, if you love me and you love God, then I should be driving around in a Rolls Royce.
Wow.
Famous line from him.
And, of course, Creflo Dollar has, what, 3 Rolls Royces or Bentleys or, yeah, exactly.
He has a fleet of double-wide black and gold trailers that I know. I don't know what's in his personal car collection because one time when driving along the I-4 in Florida, as far as the eye can see, you had a whole string and you saw CD. And then underneath him, find Creflo Dollar Ministries. And he probably had something at the Orange, you know, where they keep the Orange, I guess the Orange County Center or whatever. I forgot the name.
What a beautiful racket.
I tell you.
I mean, if you have an appreciation for a great con artist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, like what was it George Collins said? You know, it's the only thing. Nothing and get rich off of it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think I'm in the wrong hustle.
Yeah, okay. No, yeah, the thing is, you and I and, like, a lot of people in this audience in the non-universe have just can't get past that sociopathic behavior.
Yeah, not willing to be it.
Exactly. We just can't seem to do it. You know, just can't. You know, cannot seem to get past it. You know.
Hey, well, it's that whole conscience thing, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, when you don't have a conscience, it's easy to, you know, to do it. And like I said, it's always strange to me that throughout my career, whenever I've had, unfortunately, you know, and it's unfortunate, with very few exceptions. I must say there have been one, possibly two, three exceptions the most, but I've had, you know, I've had plenty of African-American management. And a lot of them tend to be very religious conservatives.
And they got there because God likes them better.
Yeah.
Because God likes them almost as much as a white guy.
Exactly, and this is...
Oh, shame on me, shame on me. I'm so sorry.
Well, it's true. Well, what you're saying is true. But you see, there's a little tidbit about Calvinism. It's that within Calvinism, they say people of color can never get into the kingdom, are not part of the divinely elected.
Ooh, I didn't know that, but that's just nasty.
Well, that's the religious foundations for... the church that the Afrikaners practice.
Oh, you mean the Boers down in South Africa? Sure.
Yeah, you can never be, and that was the foundation for Mormons.
Well, yeah, the Mormons only got around to letting the people of darker skin into Planet Kolob or whatever, 1975?
I don't know. I don't care. You know, they come knocking on my door, and, you know, I kind of respect them because, you know.
Take some guts to do that.
Exactly, especially back in the bad old days of the crack era in New York. I said, boy, you got, you know, I used to tell him, well, I hope you make friends. You know, I certainly hope you can make some friends, Easy.
Because you're in a rough place to be trying.
Exactly. You know, exactly. You know, now things have changed considerably. You know. But back in the day, I can tell you, if I, you know, regard religious differences and all, you know, they, a couple of them had my respect.
Sure. Well, anybody who's willing to dress like that and ride a bicycle, got something coming. Hey, Kevin, got to roll on, brother, but awfully good hearing from you. Great conversation this evening.
Same here. Always good, brother.
All right, you take care.
Okay, bye
now. Calling from Brooklyn, that's our buddy Kevin. And in line with the theme that Kevin was working, I think maybe we finish off the program this evening just with a couple of little examples of that kind of hateful Calvinism. You have a crappy life because God doesn't like you very much, sort of thing. And you know what? Yeah, this will not come as a surprise to you, of course, but lo and behold, if it doesn't manifest itself, here we go again, in the healthcare debate. I offer for your delectation and your appreciation Congressman Paul Brown, Republican, of course, from Georgia. Now, this is one of the guys who stood up in the House of Representatives and said that the public option would kill people. Those were his words. You know, nothing, no shades of nuance or anything, but that it would kill people. And that's Brown, Paul Brown. You know, good old Georgia Scots-Irish. You know, what are you going to do? Me too. So it's not like I'm talking about somebody outside my own group, except that I have a conscience and Paul Brown doesn't. But he had a town hall meeting and he got a little pushback in Georgia, of all places. See, that's what I was talking about with Juanita earlier. When you see liberals stand up when you see Daniel in the lion's den, when you see Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego standing amidst the flames in the fiery furnace, you gotta love them for it. And this is one of those moments. It's also sick, twisted, and psychotic, but you'll be able to sort out easily enough who is which part. Town Hall, last Tuesday.
I live in Georgia, and just in response to mine's wife's rather. I live in Athens, and in response to the woman who talked about her cousin having depression in England, she asked if anyone had experienced that here and what it was like. And I've lived in Georgia all my life, and all due respect to her, and I've never experienced the Canadian and English healthcare system. I lived in Georgia all my life. But she asked she said, until you've experienced that here, and I'd just like to tell what it was like here. I was diagnosed with major depressive disorder 2 years ago after trying to kill myself. And I wound up in a hospital in Lawrenceville. I wasn't given an option. I was forced to be there. And all I got out of it was a prescription for medicine, which I have no way of affording because I don't have health insurance, and I was stuck with $1,700 in debt. And so she was asking what it would be like. And that's what it's like. For the last 2 years, I've lived in misery because I can't afford insurance for this disease I've been diagnosed with. So I just want to share what it's actually like here. Thank you.
Okay. Young man tried to kill himself. Major depressive disorder. Goes to a hospital. They give him a prescription for presumably some antidepressant. So far, so good. Are we on track? Herewith, the response of compassionate conservative Representative Paul Brown.
Incredible.
created a lot of that in my career. And the thing is, people who have depression, who have chronic diseases, in this country, physicians are treating folks.
They're not treating him.
People can always get care in this country by going to the emergency room. The question is, can everybody have access to health care in this country?
Listen to him push back. Listen to that. People can always get care by going to the emergency room.
In this country, physicians are treating folks. People can always get care in this country by going to the emergency room. The question is, can everybody have access to health care in this country? The question is, who pays for it, where do they get it, and what costs? Going to the emergency room is the most expensive way of trying to deliver health care. And what we need to do, my bill also reforms in TALA so that we can have patients who are not critically ill and in danger where their life or their pregnancy.
He tried to kill himself! They're not critically ill or their life is in danger. Did you catch that?
Pregnancy's in danger so that they can go to places like Mercy Clinic. I've given a lot of my time there. My bill also helps get physicians to contribute their time to places like Mercy Clinic, to the health department, and other sources.
And your Vorpal blade went snicker snack. That's insanity. It's also the Calvinism of which Kevin spoke. You can always go to the emergency room. Because, see, you'd have health care if God liked you enough. But you don't, because you don't. Couple that with this. You can go over and see the whole story at moveon.org. This next story, move on, POL.moveon.org/dawn. Okay, DAWN, POL.moveon.org/dawn. Got to get through this quick. This is the story. This is the story of life in hell. It's the story of Dawn Smith, who says, I'm at the end of my rope. What Cigna is doing to me is, well, it's outrageous. I have a brain tumor. Doctors are ready to help me, but Cigna has been blocking me from getting testing and treatment for 2 years while almost doubling my premiums. Then this week was the kicker. Cigna's pharmacy called to say that the copay on the medicine that helps control my debilitating head pain is skyrocketing from $10 to $1,115. That's not a typo. They're making me pay 100 times what I'm paying now in addition to my $753 a month premium. Can't afford that, so when the pain comes, I won't have any defense. I'll spend hours in the fetal position, out of my mind with pain. When my story went public a couple of weeks ago, with the help of over 100,000 MoveOn members, Cigna said they would pay for a test I'd been asking for at Cleveland Clinic. It was a step in the right direction, but after 2 years of denials and with a long course of treatment ahead of me, I knew better than to just take them at their word. So I asked questions, but they wouldn't offer any explanation for why they denied my coverage for so long, or any assurance that they had changed their procedures so I wouldn't face the same unjust denials again. And I began to wonder if they were more interested in just sweeping my story under the rug than actually helping me. When I got this latest news from Cigna's pharmacy on Tuesday, I kept asking myself, is this a mistake or is this happening because I went public with my case? Are other Cigna customers receiving the same phone calls? Of course they are. And so are Kaiser Permanente customers. And so are Blue Cross customers. And so are Aetna customers. And so are the customers of every avarice-driven health insurance operation in this country. Sweet Jesus. I have a brain tumor, and my insurance won't cover it. We're back to the unfunny side of the Mark Twain thing last night. Maybe if she had a brain tumor and got struck by lightning, then they would. Monsters. 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 So we will close the program with that this evening. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Thanks for your emails. Thanks for popping into the chat room. Thanks for your calls. Thanks to Peter Godbold, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. The hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
It's so out of character. It's so unlike me. It is a Thursday afternoon, a Thursday evening, perhaps a Friday morning, wherever you are. But wherever you are and whatever it is, it's kind of unusual that I would be on the air on a Thursday of late since late August. Because it's middle school football season, of course, and usually I'm somewhere busily, professional broadcaster here. Don't try this at home. Busily videoing and watching Ferg's middle school football game. But such is not the case tonight. No. Even middle schools have bye weeks. And this is ours. So rather than being off somewhere around the wilds of Fayette County on some football watching expedition, I'm here. I'm in the studio. And I like it. I like four straight days of broadcasting. And of course, we will, we'll get back to normal sooner rather than later because it's not a very long middle school football season to begin with. But I'm awfully glad to be here this evening, and I'm awfully glad that you're here. Nice crowd going in the chat room already. So I hope you're ready for 3 hours of good conversation. I hope you will participate in 3 hours of good conversation on just about anything that you want to talk about. And I, of course, I've got a couple of topics that I think we would do well to address. Of course, you cannot begin the broadcast this evening without somehow or another referencing the natural disaster and the horror taking place in Indonesia. The United Nations at present estimating that over 1,100 people are dead in the quakes that struck Indonesia in the last 24 hours. There was the quake itself. There have been mudslides and collapses, losses of electricity, all the things that are attendant upon a natural disaster such as this that struck around the city of Padang in Indonesia. I'm sure that there are relief agencies on the way, but let me, just as a word, you know, a word to the wise is sufficient. And with that in mind, if you are inclined, and I'm not urging you not to, no, far from it, but if you are inclined to try to help out with the relief in Indonesia, please be careful about whom you give money to. You can never be too careful. I remember when the tsunami struck back around Christmas a few years back, and lo and behold, one of the first people in line with their hands out was an organization that was tied to one Marion Patrick or Marion Francis Robertson. Yeah, Marion Francis, because Pat, again, he's a Republican whose name isn't what his name, what he says his name is. But it turned out it was money going into the into the greasy little fists of Pat Robertson. And there were people, lo and behold, giving money away to Pat Robertson to send Bibles to people who desperately needed food, shelter, and clothing. I was reminded of this when I received a press release from what I can only consider to be a right-wing religion industry agency. No sooner were the dead beginning to be counted in western Sumatra than I got a press release. MAF responds to massive earthquake in Indonesia. Aviation ministry flies in relief and assessment teams amid devastation. MAF is apparently Mission Aviation Fellowship. How I got on this email list, I don't know. Let's see. Friends of MAF can help in two ways. First, they can pray that rescue workers gain access to people who need food and medical care. Lord, again with the praying. Second, they can make financial gifts. Oh, well, okay. Yeah, that's actually kind of flipped there. What they want is the financial gifts and the praying they can neither. Yeah, the praying they can do without. They want the money. These are missionary teams of aviation, communications, technology, and education specialists who build God's kingdom. Oh, Lordy. So the hustle is on. The hustle is on. So just be aware. When you dig deep to try to help out in these efforts, just remember that there are, because we have a religion industry in this country, that there are a lot of people who are actively and excitedly and almost orgiastically going to try to profit from the misery and the agony of suffering poor people. Because that's one of the things that down through the centuries the religion industry is best at. Capitalizing on misery. Well, you may be starving to death, but God still loves you. God got a bowl of porridge I can eat? No, but he loves you. Live on hay day by day. There'll be pie in the sky when you die. John Fox is reminding me, if folks want to help and be sure that it's going to get there, there's no better agency than World Vision Australia. You can go to worldvision.com.au, worldvision.com.au/home, HOME.ASPX, World Vision Australia. and I don't mean to be so cynical, but see, I remember that. You remember Bill the Cat Killer Frist, who went to visit the tsunami area after it had struck, and was heard to say, "Now he was Senate Majority Leader Bill the Cat Killer Frist. His family actively involved in one of the great bunco healthcare organizations of the time. But he was heard to say, "Now y'all get a picture of me over here and get some of that real good devastation in the background. Make sure you get the devastation in the background." Yeah. I've been hearing about this all day long, and of course, as is the case with a natural disaster like this, the news just gets worse and worse and worse.